the download, sepia executive chef Andrew Zimmerman, from the Netflix show Love, actor and writer Paul Rust, and live music from the Chicago band The Omis. Now here's your host, a man who just binge-watched old episodes of Dateline NBC, Justin Kaufman.
What can I say? I'm a Stone Phillips kind of guy. I want to know what happened. I want to know what happened in the world back in 2004. Thinking about watching Unsolved Mysteries next. I never liked that show, Unsolved Mysteries. And I think it's because it's all in the title. Unsolved Mystery. If you listen to this show a lot, and if you do, thank you. You know I'm a big fan of River Monsters on Animal Planet. Because it's a mystery. What fish did the damage? And then the fisherman, I always forget the guy's name, goes and finds the fish, and he catches the fish. Not once in the history of that program has he not caught the fish. That makes for great television. Unsolved Mysteries? We may never know what happened. Oh, that's terrible. Welcome to the download, everybody. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock here on WGN Radio. I appreciate you tuning in. We got an outstanding show lined up. First up, Roebling and Lundy are back in the studio, touche, to get us up to speed on all things politics. A lot going on nationally as Trump alienates women voters. Bernie Sanders makes a late push. And locally, did an obscure Illinois Supreme Court ruling possibly pave the way for a state budget deal? Or worse, a government shutdown? All that coming up this hour. My guest tonight at the big table is one of Chicago's best chefs, Chef Andrew Zimmerman. Has been nominated several times by the James Beard Foundation for Best Chef, but he's yet to win. But that hasn't stopped him from making Sepia a must-visit location here in Chicago's West Loop. We'll talk to him about his approach to fine dining and talk about what it takes to rise above the fray when it comes to being a successful restaurant here in Chicago. Also tonight, comedian, writer, and actor Paul Rust is having a banner year. His show Love on Netflix was a huge success, co-created with Judd Apatow. Then Apatow gave him his dream job. Russ co-wrote the new Pee-wee Herman movie with Paul Reubens. We'll talk with Russ about how his show Love came to be and about writing jokes for one of the most recognizable characters on the planet, a character that he idolized growing up. And speaking of jokes, it's Monday night, so it's time for the worst. Hashtag the worst. It's an easy game, and we got stuff to give away. It's simple. You know what's the worst? Leftover jelly beans. I mean, no one eats jelly beans unless it's Easter time, and now you just got a slew of them. They're everywhere, and they're going to be in your house until May, right? You're going to be sitting there like Memorial Day, like cooking up brats and be like, oh, I guess I'll try these six leftover at the bottom of the candy jar leftover jelly beans. The worst. Ugh, I hate jelly beans. I'm not a jelly bean guy. They have a shelf life, right? Gross. We'll play the worst after 9:30 tonight with comics Elizabeth Gomez and Soli Santos. And live music tonight. I love this band. The Omis have been bringing their brand of soul and R&B to Chicago audiences for a few years. And they're going to be performing live in studio tonight at 10:30. I cannot wait. All that plus news, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. And, of course, production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago. Starring those who know it well. All right, well, let's get to it. We start with the carryout, of course. This is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper. See you at home. You don't have to. Here are today's top stories. The Supreme Court chose not to hear a Blagojevich appeal. Would you want to hear that appeal? No. This pretty much ends Blagojevich's hopes of getting out of jail, although he could get a lesser sentence from an appellate resentencing by a no-name judge named Zagel. Wait. Oh, I'm sorry. Zagel. Judge Zagel. Wow. The same judge that threw the book at him is in charge of resentencing him. Wow. You know what I call that? Life. Mayor Emanuel went back to being Mayor Emanuel by telling the police board to shove their candidates where the sun don't shine. He's choosing his own top cop, Eddie Johnson, head of patrols. Come on down. You're the next contestant on Take the Blame.
And if you're going to be Top Cop, you can't be called Eddie. It's Ed, okay? Eddie's for local DJs or comedians. Ed. Ed Johnson. Ed. Governor Rauner was in a Wilmette school today, good place to be if you can get it, and was asked about the presidential campaign, in which, among other words, he called the rhetoric weird. Well, I think it's weird you're chilling in a Wilmette middle school when the city schools are about to go on strike on Friday, but who am I? Speaking of Friday, it's on the teacher strike, not the new season of The Voice. And the more I read about what's at stake, it's going to be on again and again and again. So maybe instead of these one-day strikes, maybe do a miniseries like the OJ thing. As a city, listen, I'll speak for all taxpayers. We're not cutting teachers' money. Can we all agree on that? Let's just all agree. Politics aside, we're not cutting teachers' money. Everybody, go back to the way you were. And in gun violence news, no homicides yesterday on Easter. How about that? It's a little deceiving because there were 12 shot, but no one died. So that's a win. In national news, Senator Sanders is mounting yet another comeback. He swept three states this weekend, and he's pushing for superdelegates and the party to change their mind and read the tea leaves. Democrats want change, and he's the candidate. In response, Hillary said, yeah, but how many FBI agents are reading your emails? That's what I thought. The Republican National Committee doesn't care about a petition. There will be no open carry at the GOP convention in August. So that means Trump supporters will have to attack Cruz supporters with their bare hands. Oh, that's boring. This is an interesting population story. In 35 years, the number of people living over 65 will double. Oof, I've been saying it for years. 65 is new 30. Instagram is getting some heat for changing their algorithm. This time, it's from celebrities. A bunch of B-list and C-list and D-list and internet celebrities are upset today, telling fans there's a fix by just turning on notifications. But see, that's a hoax. That's just a way to make sure that celebrities' posts show up on your phone. So let me get this straight. Celebrities are faking indignancy to trick 14-year-olds. Ah, wow. But I wonder what Selena Gomez is up to. I'm going to hit this notification. Yeah, I got to see what she's doing. A new study suggests that the weird cat bacteria found in kitty litter that makes people go crazy may have something to do with road rage. Apparently, it causes anger and aggression, and millions have it. And apparently, they all drive on the Kennedy. Yikes. In weather, nice enough. In sports, the Hawks are back to their winning ways with back-to-back victories this weekend. They got six games left. Last night's win clinched them a playoff berth, so they're in. But it's NHL hockey, which I believe uses Common Core math for playoff seeding. So right now, the Hawks would be, let me do this. Okay, 1 plus 4 divided by the color red. Then you hit that weird symbol on the calculator. Then you write a long-form essay. Yeah, I think they're going to be the 3 seed. Maybe the 4. Maybe the 3. I don't know. In spring training news, Jason Hayward is recovering from multiple bee stings after he was swarmed during a game this weekend. Is it just me, or is that, like, obviously a prankster? Like a cardinal prankster came in and, like, put a beehive in right field. Just seems something right out of, like, Ernest Goes to Camp, doesn't it? Why isn't anybody investigating that? Someone should investigate. Isn't there, like, a commissioner for this? The Bulls are two games back to the Pistons. Atlanta comes to town tonight, who have drubbed the Bulls all year. But they got to win. The playoffs start tonight, which, of course, means they'll lose by 30. Hey, was I the only one that wasn't too broken up to watch Bill Self in Kansas not make the Final Four? I'm still burned a little bit that he left the Illini. Also in college basketball, the Lady Blue Demons lost their Sweet 16 matchup to Oregon State, so they are done. Good run. The Bears signed linebacker Sam Acho today to help with special teams, so they keep re-signing dudes from last year's special team squad. You know, I'd be okay if they brought in new blood, right? I mean, unless the coaching staff feels like this crew, they get it. You guys do an amazing job giving up touchdowns, running it out to the 10-yard line. You got penalties almost every kick. You got a kicker that misses game winners. You know what? You are Bears special teams. Everybody, here's a few million. I just assume that the special teams coach has a country accent. And finally tonight, Justin Bieber showed his bear butt on Instagram on Easter, and it broke the internet. Justin Bieber's backside may have a million-plus likes, but it didn't outbox office Superman vs. Batman. But it did get much better reviews. Bieber's butt, somewhat recommended. Well, that's the carryout for March 28, 2016. Hey, we got a lot of Easter leftovers. So for $5, we'll just give you a Ziploc bag with lamb and eggs and whatever else was left over. You're welcome.
That's fun to say. Bieber's butt. All right, coming up, was it bad taste for Governor Rauner to visit and take photos at a Wilmette Middle School today with the Chicago strike on the horizon? We'll talk with the guys from Touche coming up after the break here. It's a download. Stay with us. Coming up, did an obscure Illinois Supreme Court ruling pave the way for a state budget deal, or worse, a government shutdown? We're going to talk about that with our regulars, Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy from Touche, coming up after the news. Rob Martier, how are you, my man? How was the weekend?
I'm doing well. Not bad. Yours?
It was good. It was good. Did you have a big shindig?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. Enough food to feed three red Chinese armies. I mean, it's, you know, it's crazy.
I feel like my family was off on the food, meaning it was like triple. Like, I ate some pasta tonight. I'm going to get some tomorrow. Like, I feel like there was too much food. There was an extra cake. I brought home a whole cake.
It's obscene. It really is.
Yeah. I mean, it's not to rub it in people's face who are less fortunate, but I did bring home a cake.
Well, there you go.
I don't know if it was that we had too much food. Maybe no one liked the cake. And they're like, here, you can have this fruit cake. Justin, take this one.
Oh, okay.
We had a cake in the shape of a lamb, which looked kind of cool.
Best. That's the best.
And then you start carving it up, and then you think back to your high school biology class. But then I took a bite of the thing, and it had coconut on it. I don't like. I'm a big coconut guy.
Isn't that usually what the lamb cake is, coconut on the outside?
Is it? Yeah.
Maybe because it's the best ingredient to make it look like a cool coat.
Yeah.
I think it's got a cool coat. Oh, look. You made the coconut looks like it's got hair on it. Not what you want from a cake. But
a lot of ham left over. I'm going to be having like omelets and ham sandwiches.
We should have a ham party. All right. Well, good to know. Well, we're set. We're set with food for the week. Here on the download.
Indeed.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what I just said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche.
You go right, you go right, you go left.
Touche indeed.
Touche, we're back.
Hey. Back. I think we're finally over the Illinois primary hangover that consumed us the last few weeks. This weekend helped with Donald Trump's strange approach to courting women and Senator Bernie Sanders making a late run by winning some states this weekend. And closer to home, pensions? No. Blagojevich getting out of prison? No. Possible end to the state budget stalemate?
No.
No.
Let's argue, debate, yell over each other like you do when you're supposed to be talking politics, like you did yesterday at the Easter table with our regular segment Touche in studio, Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling. Dave, a Democrat analyst, Chris, a Republican analyst, and they tussle every Monday here on the download. Good to see you guys.
Hey, good to see you too. And I'm glad our tussling is just verbal tussling.
right.
I don't want to get into that Trump level kind of tussle.
That the open carry petition that's going
on.
Yeah,
exactly.
All right, so let's get right to it. Let's start with the Democrat side. Let's start with Senator Sanders. Big weekend. Is it too late?
Yes.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. And the Bernie people are feeling all puffed up today, and Bernie was all excited, and that's great. And then David Plouffe, Obama's delegate guru, wrote a great piece in which he said the chance of Hillary Clinton not being the nominee is zero. Just to put it in perspective, Bernie's making a big deal out of the fact he won 5 of the last 6. And he did. And in those 5 of 6, he gained fewer net delegates than Hillary got in Florida.
Yeah, but he's complaining about that. He's taking it in a step. He's saying, I'm winning, and I think we need to change a system where I'm winning states and votes aren't counted.
Yeah, but he wants to have it both ways because, you know, a few days ago he said, well, I think the superdelegates can decide this thing if we move forward, and I'm winning some of these states by big margins. So you can't either live by the superdelegates or you die by the superdelegates. Yeah.
Obviously, there is some weakness with Hillary, or this would not be going on. I'm not saying that it is some sort of fatal weakness. I'm not saying that it's riven the party such that the Republicans are gaining a overwhelming advantage from this. I'm not saying that. In fact, I think on the Republican side, there is a real split going on, and that could have very dramatic consequences. But folks who care about Hillary or care about Hillary winning, if they can get over 150 FBI agents who are investigating her.
then, which is being disputed.
Let's see. Yeah. Did I win the pool? That took exactly 93 seconds, Chris. Congratulations.
Well, now the Washington Post is writing about it, so all of the Hillary people are going to have to admit that something actually is going on. But in any case, something is also going on with Bernie Sanders. And Hillary and her people, this is called what, Mao's famous essay, The Negation of the Negation. They have to find a way to overcome this challenge, which has traction. It has traction with a part of her base. And she doesn't have to squash it. She's got to reconcile it, presumably, to win in November.
Do you agree? I mean, as someone, you've come out, you've supported Hillary before. Does the push to the left, the push towards Bernie Sanders platforms and things, is that going to stick? Is that something that she continues to sort of champion after this thing is decided and she's the nominee at the convention?
I mean, look, Bernie has had a profound impact on this race and on the Democratic race. He has pushed Hillary to the left in places that she's not particularly comfortable. All of that having been said, it's like every 4 years or every 8 years we live through something and completely forget what happened before. In 2008, the campaign between Clinton and Obama was intense and it was nasty
it was
personable or very personal. You know, the Hillary, you're likable enough. I mean, that was a nasty race. I mean, this is not pleasant. It's not fun if you're, on the losing end of things. But at the end of the day, the thing that will unite Democrats is the Republican nominee, which is going to be Donald Trump.
Let's make a transition. Donald Trump, I can't tell what the strategy is here with the constant, I don't know what it is, but just bringing up the vote, the women vote. I mean, there just seems to be constant foot in mouth problem with Donald Trump as he tries to, I guess, work his way out of some bad tweets in the last week and a half.
Well, I mean, his tweeting thing is something very different. But, I don't like Trump, and I hope he's not the nominee. And you have to say at this point, there's only going to be one. The nominee is either going to be Cruz or Trump. And right now it is likely that it will be Trump, but it is by no means certain. And it's by no means as certain that Trump will be the nominee on the Republican side as it is that Hillary will be the nominee on the Democratic side until the perp walk, until she gets indicted. But in any case, Cruz could actually win this thing. But Trump is a profoundly flawed candidate for president.
So it's hard. I mean, you can go to everywhere around the, I mean, how he's campaigning and poke holes. And
what he has
doing,
going for him is a lot of people like him, and a lot of people are coming out to vote for him. And he's bringing people into the process in record numbers. And that is itself, I've said this from the very beginning. I said this at a Lundy lunch in August or something. There is something to be learned by that, just like there's something to be learned by Bernie Sanders.
No, I agree with that. But here's the thing. Politics is a game of addition. And what Donald Trump is doing right now is constant subtraction. So you can't have the negatives that he has, a net negative 65% among Latinos, 90% among African Americans. But the women number is just staggering. There were two polls out this weekend, one of which showed him as a net negative of 50 points. The other was 38, net negative 38. Even among Republican women, he had a 40% negative rating. Hmm. I mean, you just can't keep losing key demographic groups and win at the end of the day.
You know, I mean, I think that's selective. Honestly, I think
selective?
That David is being
women,
selective.
Women, Latinos, blacks,
it is selective.
Muslims.
It's selective because you've selected Trump. I could cite Hillary as the least trusted individual ever to be considered for the nomination of a major
other
political
than Trump.
Party. No, Hillary has got worse trust figures than
Trump is rising. Trump is rising.
Well,
he's trying to compete with her.
That's the poll of record. Like, who do we trust less?
Great. Well, I'm saying these all contribute to this extraordinary and unprecedented and sort of baffling year that we're going through.
Well, I mean, for you, Chris, every single day, the media tries to get Donald Trump to talk about some of the bigger issues, foreign policy being one, other things. And he continues to, I don't know, further himself from a right. traditional Republican stance. He wants right. to undo and he wants to undo and change treaties, change things around. What's your take on it as someone who, you know, that's the bread and butter of what you're talking about?
I don't think that he's prepared to be president. And I mean, I'm going to be supporting him if he's the nominee of the party. But this is a guy who
I don't understand that.
Well, if you were supporting Bernie right now, you'd probably say you're not crazy about Hillary, but you're going to support
Bernie's
her.
Bernie's not unfit to be president.
No,
Donald Trump is unfit to be president.
No, no, we're talking in my suggestion, Hillary is in the Trump. But in any case, I am here to tell you, you think of the McGovern people back in 72, but I'm here to tell you that Trump is saying things that defy reason and logic. And I am not crazy about that. And I think that to some extent it reverberates with a segment of the population. There are people out there who think that foreign entanglements are of no use. You hear this coming up not just with politics and with international relations, but also on the area of trade. And of course, when people say that about trade, they're betraying, you know, I think a lot of heartfelt emotion, but also very little economic understanding.
Chris Roebling, Dave Lundy, touche. We're our Monday segment here on The Download. Let's take a break and go local. Let's talk Rauner,
yeah.
Emmanuel. Let's get closer to home here on The Download. We'll take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us.
I just said that.
I know you just said that.
Okay, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
Well, I'm not sure where you're going with this.
That's what you said.
That's what I'm saying to you.
All right.
Touche. There it is. Chris Roebling and Dave Lundy in studio for our Monday check-in here on all things politics. You know, guys, we have been talking national, and we did a lot before the primary, but let's talk local. Today, a big day for Mayor Emanuel. He kind of became Mayor Emanuel again in the way that he said, I'm not going to take the police board recommendations. I'm going with my own guy.
Even though he was theoretically obligated to do so.
Yeah. So talk about Mayor Emanuel, because obviously all eyes are on him as the city, you know, moves forward. And here comes the spring and the summer.
Well, the mayor has an enormous challenge. He has become singularly disliked and within the communities, within the African-American community, within the Latino community. I mean, there really is a fundamental distrust for the mayor at this time, and he has to figure out how to earn that trust back. There's also a distrust of the mayor clearly within the police force. I mean, what's one of the least reported stories is that what has happened since the Laquan McDonald case and this year in the crime stats. I mean, we've reported the crime stats, crimes going up, but what's going on with the interplay between the police and the community that has led to this doubling of murders and shootings? And I mean, something has changed here. And I think that the decision that the mayor made to appoint somebody from within the department and an African-American within the department
has a lot to do with morale.
Has a lot to do with morale and trying to say, hey, we need to have a better relationship.
What do you think of the mayor, Chris?
Well, he's a detestable he's a detestable opportunist, and he's damaged goods, and he's a serial liar and prevaricator, and he's been caught in it. And I think if you listen closely to what Dave Lundy just said, and you read closely what David Axelrod has said, he really drew the short straw in succeeding Richie Daley, who ignored the issues that were apparent to everyone and basically ran bread and circuses, according to John Cass of this august organization. I still think of the Tribune, GN, you know, as one.
Sure, sure, sure.
And so what happened here is that, you know, you had bread and circuses from Daley and nobody paid any of the bills. And then Rahm was essentially kicked out of the White House by Valerie Jarrett because they detest each other. And so Rahm gets in this job as mayor, but he doesn't have anything to pay these incredible bills. And then he goes and he starts lying about the police force. And I want to say, I agree with what David just said. He promised year in, year out, this is tops. We're doing it right. We brought in Gary McCarthy. He knows what he's doing. He has all my trust, all my confidence. Then the moment the Laquan, and he knew for a year, Laquan, you know, the whole thing. And then off goes Gary McCarthy. And then he sets up a new national search. He says, we're going to do it right this time. We're going to get somebody. The national search, they turn the crank a few times on the black box, comes up with the wrong people. So what does he do? Out that goes. Now I'm Rahm Emanuel again. And I don't know, excuse me, can I say that on the radio?
No, I don't think you can.
And,
all right.
And I'm going to do what I want. So this is the old Rahm, you know, let me pick up the phone and yell at somebody, Emanuel. Right.
Well, I mean, Dave, how does a Rahm Emanuel get back on top? I mean, because we know Mayor Emanuel not only is just the mayor of Chicago, but he's a big player in the Democratic Party. Obviously, with Hillary Clinton running in 2016, he has contacts with the Clintons. This seems to be Rahm time.
Well, it does, but fundamentally, you need to start small. You need to start with the core issues, the trust issues, the community issues. And, you know, look, I'm not embracing everything that Chris just said.
Go ahead.
In his inimitable, subtle, you have no idea where he's coming from fashion. Nonetheless, there's a trust chasm in the city. And you saw that in the Illinois primary where everybody was trying to tie their opponent to the mayor.
Right.
I mean,
Bernie ran against Rahm Emanuel.
I've never seen anything like that in my life.
Yeah.
It was bizarre and it was effective.
We're approaching, Rahm is approaching Mayor Abe Beam status. And if you remember an obscure movie, it was actually absolutely fantastic movie, Robert Shaw and Walter Matthau, called The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
Fabulous movie.
Okay.
I love that movie.
There you go.
Agree.
Validation. You agree. We agree. But The Taking of Pelham.
Two thumbs up.
The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3 is the story of a hijacked New York City subway train. It's an absolutely spectacular. See the original, not the remake. And in the original, which was filmed while Abe Beam was mayor, they had the mayor showing up to express concern about what was going on down in the subway. And when the mayor would show up, the entire crowd would boo, because that's what would happen in New York in the 70s right. with Mayor Abe Beam. I want to tell you,
it's a Rahm, long setup for that payoff.
Well, Rahm Emanuel is getting to the point where I don't know.
Does he have an out? Does he have a parachute here?
He's not going to be on top.
If Hillary Clinton wins in 2016, does Rahm Emanuel go, oh, you guys, they need me as ambassador of New Zealand. I got
to
do
it. I think he's going to HUD. HUD.
Yeah.
He's looking at HUD.
I think that ship has sailed.
Really?
I think that the toxicity that surrounds him. I mean, he's going to have to pull some major crisis and pull the rabbit out of his hat and turn it all around and demonstrate the kind of leadership that Rudy Giuliani did at 9/11. Not that that's what anybody wants, but he's got to show some really high-level leadership that makes people take a second look.
And
it's going to be challenging
for him. And by the way, I was speaking on behalf of Rahm Emanuel during the re-election because of his devotion to getting jobs to Chicago. But if you look closely now at what he's been doing with jobs for Chicago, what is he doing? He's taking, like, it's in Fran Spielman's story today in the Sun-Times. He's got the Whole Foods warehouse coming into Pullman from Indiana. He's taken corporate headquarters from, say, Schaumburg or Lincolnshire and brought them downtown. Any regional, Jeff Hewings, the great regional economist of the University of Illinois, will tell you in a heartbeat, that is a total waste of time.
It's a zero sum, yeah.
Yeah, but I'll take jobs from Indiana any day of the week.
Okay, let's get to this, because I kind of teased this out. Let me ask you, was it bad taste for Governor Rauner to be in a Wilmette school today, taking pictures and doing photo opportunities?
No, it was not.
A teacher strike on Friday.
Look, it's I posted about this on Facebook. I live in Wilmette. My kid goes to Wilmette Public School, and had the governor showed up at my kid's school in fifth and sixth grade, my son would have probably led a rally against the governor. But it was just weird optics. I mean, the governor is being his policies have decimated the social service sector around this state.
Not true.
It's 100%
absolutely
true.
Not true.
It's what Edgar said.
That's not what Edgar said.
Edgar
did not say that.
Him of holding the budget hostage.
He did not say Rauner decimated social services. You were wrong.
He said
that was not
that by
said.
Holding the budget hostage, these organizations are being
Let's
decimated.
Let's get Edgar
That's
on the
fact.
Phone. Call Jim Edgar. God. Gosh darn it. Call Jim Edgar.
Again?
This is
a 7-second delay for
I want to tell you, Rauner has stood up to the folks who gave us this disaster. And it's the disaster that Rahm has proven unable to deal
with.
2 years,
no budget.
I'm sorry. 12 years of Democrat domination, no progress whatsoever.
Great progress was being made until the governor allowed the tax increase to disappear.
The governor
allowed. Our unpaid bills were down to below $4 billion. They're now going to hit $10 billion by June.
I want to tell you, I don't think there's a thing wrong with him going to Wilmette. I think Wilmette kids deserve public school, just like kids in Cairo and Galena and
Yes, I agree.
And Pullman
but
and every other neighborhood.
But the from a political perspective are terrible.
No, the optics are not terrible because those kids deserve
maybe
public school.
Maybe he was going there because his base is weakening. Maybe he's losing support.
Let me ask you, Rich Miller had
folks.
A good piece in Capital Facts today about the obscure ruling at the Illinois Supreme Court talking about really opening up the door for possible litigation, saying the courts can't pay for state workers, that it's got to be from the General Assembly.
The courts can't order.
Can't order it without an appropriation.
Right.
And so the what had been happening is that people had been operating as if you had a contract, that you would be paid regardless of whether there was a state budget. And what the court did is it put into question whether that was true. Because
activist.
It basically said, you must have an appropriation passed by the legislature.
What does that
activist
mean?
Activist liberal courts downstate that are allied with the unions. Every story that we are talking
about.
I'm talking about the Belleville trial court was an activist judge. They went down to St. Clair County and they looked for a judge who would impose this solution.
That's the new political
that's
way.
What they found.
Both sides do that.
And
now.
What
this
was the Illinois Supreme Court that
no,
has
I'm talking
been completely
about the,
consistent in its rulings.
Right. But I'm talking about the trial court judge that wrote the order that has been followed by the state of Illinois. And what this has done, the Supreme Court of the state of Illinois speaks for the law of Illinois. And the Supreme Court of Illinois has admonished that maybe not specifically, but generally they have admonished the trial court judge. You cannot substitute your order for an accomplished act of the General Assembly and the governor.
So what does it mean? Does it mean that at some point or another,
people are going to stop getting paid?
Yeah, it functionally means that if this keeps going and if another ruling happens that says if the Attorney General goes in, which she's planning to go in and ask for a ruling on this, it could mean an actual government shutdown. Because one of the weird things about this impasse we've got is because of these court orders again and again and again, 90% of our government is being funded.
Yeah, the court's
it's
running
social
the
service providers
state.
that are not being funded, but everybody else is. And so if we wind up with an actual government shutdown. In other words, people can't get their driver's licenses renewed. They can't get their
state
license plates renewed.
Paid,
state
right.
workers aren't being paid. Then you might have the kind of crisis that will force a resolution, which might force the governor to say, okay, we're not going to keep down this crazy path of saying, I must have turnaround agenda.
No, easy.
I'm late on the news.
We'll do a budget.
No. Tell the news guy to wake up. He's getting his headphones on.
With you two down there, I am wide awake, gentlemen, hanging on your every word.
Rapt attention to every word.
Dave Lundy and Chris Roebling, we've got to leave it there. We'll have plenty of time to talk about this every Monday here on The Download. Touche, Dave Lundy, a Democrat analyst, Chris Roebling, a Republican analyst. Thank you guys for being here.
Touche.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, it's hard to keep a restaurant open for 5 years. That's the old saying, especially now when the market is saturated with new restaurants popping up every single day. So what's the secret to keeping a fine dining restaurant healthy and successful in the city of Chicago? Not just for 5 years, try 9 years. Not only did the guys at Sepia have an idea, but they're branching out. Andrew Zimmerman is the executive chef at Sepia, one of Chicago's best restaurants. And although the details are scarce, Zimmerman and owner Emmanuel Noni are opening a new place. Andrew Zimmerman, chef, welcome to The Download.
Thanks very much for having me.
So let's get it out of the way. Let's start right away. Branching out. I mean, you're here to talk about the 9-year anniversary of Sepia, which is a wonderful place. And I have a lot of questions. But let's talk about the new place. What can you tell us about the new restaurant you guys are coming up with?
What I can tell you about a new restaurant that we're going to do is, in a nutshell, what we wanted to offer is a sort of an opportunity for me and my team to expand on the flavor profiles that we already do and expand on our interest in global cuisine in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And in a sort of roll your sleeves up, have a good time, dig in slightly less fine dining paradigm than we have at CPA.
Okay.
I mean, some of those things are the kind of food that we do at CPA is informed in that same kind of way.
Right.
But we wanted something that was more fun, which is not to say that CPA is not fun.
So
it is
so
a total gas.
It's just no fun.
So it is a total gas. But like, we wanted something that was more casual, more toes in the sand, rolled up sleeve kind of vibe, and still offered us the opportunity to make the kind of food that we think is delicious and exciting. And that really is our interpretation of the food from around the world, that growing up as an American, I have access to, you know, the proverbial melting pot, right? So that's the food that I think is delicious, whether no matter where in the world it really comes from.
What are you guys thinking about time frame?
We'd like to see everything done close to the end of the year.
Do you already have a location, all that kind of stuff figured out? You're just holding it close to the vest, or does that still have to be worked out?
Oh, yeah. No, we have no idea where it's going to be. We're going to have it done by the end of the year, but no clue.
No clue.
Yeah. No, we haven't even looked for a place yet.
No, of course not.
Pretty much, I bought a couple saute pans, and I was like,
the
Trip
Tower is selling. You can
really?
Just, yeah, you can just come up here and take over
the
studio.
Is this room available?
This room is available. It does not have any running water. But
that'll be an issue. We'll get the MEP guys in here. We'll sort it out. We'll put a hood fan in here and two induction burners, and we should be okay.
That's good. It is branching out for you guys because you have had Sepia as one restaurant. You've been a one restaurant kind of establishment,
right?
But this is sort of a move towards more of what we're seeing with restaurant groups, where, you know, second restaurant. Do you plan to go into more of what we see happening in the West Loop, where there's one ownership that owns five different places, and you're sort of jumping from restaurant to restaurant?
If we think that we find concepts that we want to pursue and locations that are good for us, I don't see why we would say no to that.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be we really love Sepia, and we want to keep Sepia as the restaurant that it is, and we want to continue to make it as good as we can. But we're pretty patient and selective. Having said that, you know, if I could sell out tomorrow, like, you know, for the right number.
For the right number, right.
If somebody's got a number they want to throw out there, I'm okay with it.
Well, I mean, Sepia's have been a restaurant that has always been at the top of the list. I mean, when the Michelin stars came to Chicago, you guys were one of the big, you got the star.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, you mentioned a little bit earlier, there is a lot of global inspiration. You know,
right.
That there's different flavors, there's things coming from international. Where does that come from? Does that come from your studies? Does that come from your curiosity? Where does the flavors that you present at Sepia come from?
It comes from both of those things, my studies and my curiosity. Like, one of the reasons that I got interested in cooking in the first place was I was fortunate enough when I was young to have parents that would take me to a broad swath of restaurants. And so I was eating Indian food when I was like 9, and I was eating sushi when I was 9, and I was eating escargot when I was 6 and whatever. And I was always the kid who would, presented with the menu, would say like, oh, snails, yes, please, as opposed to, ew, that's disgusting. And when I got older, I thought like, it can't be that complicated. I could just read a book and then cook this food that I want to eat. And if I can't go to the restaurant, then maybe I can learn a little bit something about it and cook it. And through that, like, I really like going to Asian markets and just looking around at crazy stuff that's there that I didn't know existed. And it's a sort of quick little day trip into another culture that through food that I couldn't see another way of doing, you know, like I couldn't afford a ticket to Thailand,
mm-hmm.
but I could go to a market and see what their food was about a little bit and read a book that would give me an idea about what they think about food, at least. And it was a window into other cultures and other parts of the world that I couldn't find any other way. And that excited me. And so I would cook it and I loved it. And that informs the way we cook, even though what we cook is still sort of in a kind of Western, French-based fine dining model. But all of those other things that I really think are delicious filter into it.
What was the moment in which you realized that curiosity,
mm-hmm.
the ability to go take the day trips, bring different flavors in, try different things, you know, take the menus, make it your own? Did you realize that this was going to be your passion? And what did you do to make it your passion? I mean, there's one thing to say, I'm very interested in this, I'm going to experiment with these flavors, and there's another to be the executive chef, you know, running a restaurant like Sepia.
To be perfectly honest, it was really a very organic kind of situation where I got a job as a dishwasher when I was 15. At the time, thinking, like, I'm not going to work in the restaurant. This is nonsense. Because I thought I was going to get a record contract or something, you know, cool.
Yeah, like we all do, right?
But who doesn't? And then throughout playing in bands, I kept working in restaurants because I knew the drill a little bit. And it was cool. And, you know, I go to college and, like, yeah, college, none of it really sat quite right with me in the same way. And, like, food started to take over at some point. I realized that my band played and I lost money and I went to work at a restaurant and I made money. I mean, not a lot, obviously, but I would lose money every time my band played. This is not a good business model for anybody.
Right.
So I'm like, okay, well, the cooking thing's not bad and people seem to like it and they tell me I'm good, or my band plays and they tell me that they want another $20 to cover our bar tab. So, you know, that's not really a winning scenario.
Right, right, right.
So at some point I was like, okay, well, the cooking thing could be better. And then I took a job that was like the litmus test job of the fanciest, best restaurant I could find in the part of suburban New Jersey I worked in and lived in. And I was like, well, if this works out, you know, maybe I should take this more seriously. And so I did it. And it was awesome. And I loved it. And I learned a tremendous amount from a great guy from Italy. And then decided, okay, well, you know, I'm going to go to culinary school and I guess this is my deal. And then I was lucky enough really to meet a woman from Chicago. I met her in Jersey, but, you know, she was from Chicago and we were talking about where should we end up living. I was like, well, Chicago's pretty good. Charlie Trotter's there. Rick Bayless is there. Yeah, I'd probably get a job. Yeah, not bad. And we moved out here and, you know, 12 years later, against all reasonable thought, you know, I'm in charge of a restaurant that's actually pretty good.
Chef Andrew Zimmerman is in studio with us tonight. He's the executive chef at Sepia, talking about the 9-year anniversary of the restaurant and mm-hmm. also a new restaurant from him and owner Emmanuel Noni. Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Chef Zimmerman here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Chef Andrew Zimmerman. He's the executive chef at Sepia, which is celebrating its 9-year anniversary. They're opening up another restaurant. Details are scarce, but they'll be, I'm assuming at some point you'll tell us the address.
I'm assuming at some point I'll know the address, yes. Right.
The James Beard Awards, I mean, you've been a semifinalist, you've been a nominee, mm-hmm. you're a finalist. You've had great success, you just haven't taken home the medallion.
That is true.
Yet. This is your year?
One hopes so. But, you know, the only thing that I can say about that is I am super honored to even be considered, obviously. And the people that have come before me, like just even to be in the club is amazing, right? Like if you look at the list of James Beard winners, whether it's in the Great Lakes area or mm-hmm. New York or across the country,
right.
It's a bunch of really, really heavy people, you know, like the real serious people. And I'm just happy to be in the club.
Does it help you that the James Beards are in Chicago? I mean, does it help you? I don't mean by winning an award, but I mean having the whole institution come to Chicago. Do they want to eat at your restaurant? Do they want you to throw parties? That kind of thing. Does it help you to be more included in the culinary world with the Beards here in Chicago?
Well, I think so. But I mean, we don't even really look at it like that. We look at it more like, what does it do for Chicago? You know, it's really fantastic that we have this city with so many great talents, you know. I mean, we have one of the best restaurants in the entire world is here, two at least. And some other ones that are really, really excellent, you know. And that's not my metric. That's, you know, like other people's decisions on what's, you know, the best and the whatever. But to have the attention drawn to Chicago, I mean, for a long time it's always been New York. It makes sense. The James Beard House is in New York. The awards have always been in New York. And the New York restaurant scene is, of course, one of the greatest in the country. It's just fantastic that Chicago's getting the mm-hmm. the attention. Is it good for us? Yeah. You know, we're going to have a big party, and we're going to invite a lot of people. We did it last year. We had a great turnout, and we want to take the opportunity to show as many people that want to come what CP is about and what our idea of hospitality and food is about. But I mean, the bigger picture is, like,
it's good getting, for the scene here, yeah.
Yeah, and getting all the people from across the country to come here and see all of our restaurants and go to all the parties and like hang out together, and it's a blast.
I mentioned, you know, that you're this 9-year anniversary. I mean, you guys are in the West Loop. You're on, is it Des Plaines you're on? You're on,
we're on Jefferson
right there. Yeah. But to think about 9 years ago, even 9 years ago, that was an up-and-coming area. To blink your eye and look at 9 years later.
Oh, yeah, sure.
There are just hundreds of restaurants that have opened up within, you know, a 10-block radius of you guys.
Oh, yeah. And when Sepia opened 9 years ago on Jefferson, even though it was just like literally 50 yards off of Randolph, everybody told Emmanuel he was kind of crazy. Like, oh, you know, it's not really anywhere.
Right.
Are you kidding?
It's not in the loop. Like, it's on the other side of the river.
It's,
right.
You could take a minute and walk to to Randolph. And like Randolph is that's the street, right?
Right.
So it wasn't that far off. It wasn't crazy. And if you look at the development and what's happened in the West Loop, you know, it was a really brilliant move on his part, I think, to see the potential that was there and put a restaurant
there. Well, I think about your restaurant being a pioneer of that area. I mean, obviously they had restaurants already with Jerry Kleiner's restaurants and Vivo and other restaurants that were the original
and
Randolph.
And Blackbird and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like our side of we like to think of it as like our side of the bridge.
You're West East.
Kleiner
Loop,
and Vivo
East,
and stuff was on the other side of the bridge, and like Blackbird and Sepia and stuff.
But since that time, I mean, you've even seen like another resurgence of restaurants have come in, whether it be Girl and the Goat and Publican, and you guys, Sepia. I mean, talk about being the flag bearer of that kind of movement in this culinary scene. The idea when your restaurants came in 9 years ago, that's a great class of restaurants that all came up around the same time.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I think flag bearers may be overstating our contribution. We like to think we're pretty good, but that might be overstating the case a little.
We got five Beard nominations.
Yeah, but there were greater pioneers in that neighborhood than us, and we've done really well, and we're really happy to be in their company. And I think it's really good for everybody that when people think of an area in Chicago where you can go and have a lot of opportunity to have a lot of great food, and the concentration of excellent restaurants that have come together in the last few years particularly. And I think it's funny, like, you know, years ago when there was March and Kleiner had a lot of his other stuff over there, that sort of had its moment, and then it started to dip away, and then there was this resurgence of it. And I think, you know, we're glad to be part of it. But there's a lot of other great people who are doing it too.
I mentioned right at the top, you know, just the old adage that it takes a successful restaurant, you know, it's 5 years in the business. I mean, you guys have hit 9 years now. When you think about that, what does it take to keep a restaurant at the level of Sepia going at 9 years? I mean, there's been a couple restaurants north of you, a couple restaurants south of you that haven't made it, that they were highly touted and then they're gone. Mm-hmm. What is it about Sepia? What is it about your restaurant that keeps you guys going 9 years into the business?
This might sound overly simplistic, but you know, I like to think that at least at the base, it's really being committed to a couple of things like hospitality, in just the simplest sense of the word, like really taking care of our guests and making sure that they have a good time, making sure that they feel like they got a good value, making sure that they got the things that they wanted out of the experience. From a culinary standpoint, it's about constantly reevaluating what we're doing. How can we do something better, smarter? How can it taste better? How can we, you know, find a product or an ingredient that is maybe a little bit novel so people are interested in it? And constantly challenge ourselves to give the best experience that we can possibly do every day. And even though from day to day that might be a very, very minor, almost, you know, imperceptible change, the cumulative effect of that over several years is hopefully the thing that keeps us going. That, and then there's some other like serious, obvious nuts and bolts stuff, like make sure the money works,
right,
and make sure you're running a smart business, and that you're taking care of the business's bottom line interests in this, you know, in a way that's smart.
Well, I mean, running a restaurant, you know, is effectively running a small business. You know, there's a lot of things people don't think about. I mean, just the ability to get ingredients, the ability to, you know, the overhead, the exchange, the, not to mention what you just mentioned, hospitality, being able to bring repeat customers. What are some of the things that stand in the way of a restaurant having success?
There's tons of things. Like I would think, for me, you know, I'm a little bit biased on this one, but like bad cooking, you know, seems like a big one.
Sure.
But then again, like bad cooking, there's a lot of restaurants that serve food that is, you know, not particularly awesome that have been around for a long time. People love and go back to again and again. There are restaurants that have terrible customer service reviews on their food, and yet they're still open. The thing that they have going for them, and this is another thing that we really do try to do at CP, is like being consistent is probably one of the most important things in the entire restaurant industry, I think. Mm-hmm. Like if you go to a restaurant, I'm not going to name one, but like a middle of the road, average, low price point, chainy kind of thing that's super consistent, they stay in business because you know what you're getting. You're like, I'm going to spend X amount of money and I'm going to get this thing. And is it the greatest thing in the world? No. But I know what I'm going to get, and it's going to be pretty much the same as the last time I was there.
Is that hard at your level? I'm not saying at CPA, but at the level where it's a little bit more fine dining, where you have to change your menu. Mm-hmm. You have to go with the flow of what ingredients are available for you, especially when you're looking at the bottom line. Is it hard to be consistent at when you're serving food at a higher level?
Yeah. And I don't think this is just specific to us, obviously. Like, you have cooks that come and go, and you have ingredients that come and go, and there's a lot of moving parts to making sure that every single dish that goes to every single guest is at the level of quality and execution that you want. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not easy. But, you know, that's what we get paid for. Like, that's why, you know, that's why you show up at our restaurant and expect that we're going to do a good job. And if we don't, that's why you get to, you know, tell us that we didn't do a good job on Yelp.
Chef Andrew Zimmerman. He's the chef, executive chef at Sepia Restaurant. We'll continue our conversation here at the big table after the news. Stay with us. This is a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. With me tonight at the big table, Chef Andrew Zimmerman. He's the executive chef at Sepia, an award-winning restaurant. He's also up for a James Beard Award for Best Chef Great Lakes Region. He's been up a couple times before. This time around, he's going to win. You know, let me ask you, because I'm really interested in the ecosystem of a restaurant. Obviously, you have up front the wait staff and you know, all the people who work the phones, everything in front. But you also have, you know, the people in the back, the cooks, the chefs, all the people underneath you. How do you run your kitchen?
I think it would be more interesting if we had a bunch of my cooks here and they could answer that question, you know, because I'll tell you, like
is this on the record?
Yeah, like, is he going to hear this? Because for me, you know, I like to believe, rightly or wrongly or whatever, that by getting them involved and giving them a sense of ownership over what we're doing, that is a more effective strategy for running my kitchen than sort of the stereotypical, you just yell at them kind of thing.
Right. What we see on TV, right?
What you see on TV, which is really honestly not the way most kitchens are really run.
Right.
It makes for good TV, but there's a handful of kitchens that are run that way. And some of them are great, you know, or so I've heard.
That's probably any business, though. I mean, there's bosses that yell and there's bosses that don't, right?
Yeah, and I've thrown things at people, you know, and I've threatened their lives, you know.
Sure.
Occasionally.
Sure, occasionally. This fish is undercooked.
Yeah, you know, it has happened on occasion that I have been told that perhaps my temper has been lost. But in general, we like to take a more like, you know, that's just not good enough. And you're better than that. And our guests expect better than that. So you're going to do better than that. And if you're not, then we need to have a conversation about how much longer you and I are going to not do this well together.
Right.
You know, well, I mean, sure, something like that.
I mean, it is your name at the end of the day. I mean, they're putting it's Chef Zimmerman made this fish. Even if you didn't make it, it's your recipe. It's your kitchen.
Yeah.
So you can understand what's the quality control to make sure that stays, like you said, consistent in a kitchen like CPU.
Well, for that, the thing is, I check on whether or not it's being done the way I want. I have the luxury and the good fortune to have a sous chef who's worked with me at Sepia for about almost 7 years now.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
We worked together before at another restaurant, who really knows sort of the Andrew Zimmerman playbook and the standards that I want. And he, you know, I've worked with a guy for almost 10 years. Like, he knows what I want.
Right.
And so
when you're dealing with a lot of different flavors and different, I guess just, I don't want to say formulas, but just the way that you do things a little bit differently and bringing food together, you almost have to have people you trust because there's, I would assume you're almost going against some of the training that some of the chefs coming up have had. And they're like, this is how I do it. And you're like, well, this is how Andrew Zimmerman does it. Do you have to run into that where you're like, this is, you know, like I'm doing things the Andrew Zimmerman way. These chefs have to learn that way.
Yes and no. Because, I mean, the real answer to that is I am not the smartest person in the universe.
That's not what your bio says.
I paid people to write that. But, like, I have ways that I think things should be done. And if somebody wants to bring a good idea to the table, we are completely happy to steal a good idea. We're not stupid. Like, oh, that's how you cook carrots? Cool. And in this application, it seems to make a lot of sense. We'll do it. And we all got to learn something. And then we're better cooks at the end of the day. If I was just going to be dictatorial about this is how Andrew Zimmerman does it because I'm real, you know, super smart, I would be cutting myself off from learning anything. And that's just dumb, right? That's just a bad attitude. And that also speaks to having my cooks feel like they have a little bit of ownership of what we're doing and be involved in the process. If they worked for somebody, and we've had some people that have come through the kitchen that have worked at kitchens that have a lot to offer, mm-hmm. you know, if it was just, I want them to understand how we do it and I want them to cook the food when we decide on what a dish is going to be, this is how it's going to be. But getting to that point can be more of a conversation, and closing the door to learning something new would be just stupid. It's just stupid.
Chef Andrew Zimmerman is the executive chef at Sepia, celebrating its 9-year anniversary here in Chicago in the West Loop on Jefferson. Also, a new restaurant that could be coming up sometime this year. Chef Zimmerman, thanks so much for being my guest tonight.
Thanks so much for having me.
Download here on WGN Radio. Thanks to Chef Zimmerman for stopping by. I really like that guy, Pete. There's something about chefs, you know, you can get a kind of chef that, you know, doesn't have a sense of humor, maybe puts on an accent. I tried to cut the bird. This is how I cut the bird. He was very funny.
Yeah.
I enjoyed our camaraderie, our chemistry.
I like when there's no pretension involved, you know, in a fine, you know, like Tony Montuano, you know, these are like really like high-end restaurants, and they're just like regular people.
You know what I always forget to mention in the interviews is that a guy like Montuano or a guy like Zimmerman, they all do Food Network stuff. So you can see him like an Iron Chef and stuff like that. Like Zimmerman's got credits like that.
Yeah.
I just assume everybody knows that because all the super chefs here in Chicago seem to always play on the Food Network and that kind mm-hmm. of stuff. So I always feel bad that I don't put that like in the credits, like or in the intro when I'm like, he's got a James Beard Award, I should say, and he was on Iron Chef, and people be like, oh, I saw him on Iron Chef.
Yeah.
But I always forget to. It's like Food Network's like something I don't even think about. Although I've been watching a lot of Chopped.
What's Chopped?
Chopped's the one where they give you a bunch of bogus material, and then you cook it, and then you get bounced off. If you're
like they give you,
yeah, they give you like
weird ingredients.
Yeah, weird ingredients. You got to make something, and mm-hmm. then I like it, but it's just I can't taste the acid. I can't taste the acid. You're gonna have to go, and then they do like, and you know what's the worst? The terrible forward promotes on Food Network where they go, and are you going home? Dun 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 dun. Hand on the dish. Who's going home? Commercial.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's so obvious. It's like, just do you not understand, like, that formula? We see that coming a mile away. It's so alienating.
Yeah.
I just get so mad. It's the worst. it's like a bad game show bit. Who's going to? Rob, thanks for being here. We finally have our answer. Pulls it out. Dun, 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 dun. Rob, you are going... And then they hit a commercial, and you're like, yeah. Come on.
I feel a lot of those shows, specifically not food-related, but a game show, competition, Project Runway, which
yeah,
I'm a
they
fan
do that.
Of.
Did they do that stuff, too?
And it's a 45-minute show that that's a 90-minute show. And there's, oh, my God, there's so much stretching out of stuff. It's like there's, like, whole sections that you just can eliminate.
I wonder if they teach that at, UCLA. Like there's a college classic, how to stretch your show, how to fit your show into a 90-minute hole.
Like why? Well, why 90 minutes? Shows don't need to be 90 minutes.
No, they don't need to be 90 minutes. But what else are they doing on Bravo? It's a Bravo show, right?
I think it's on Lifetime now.
Yeah.
But still, yeah. Lifetime, you know, you can show a nice holiday movie or what, a Valentine's Day movie or a spring movie or whatever.
An April Fool's movie?
Yeah.
A prank that went wrong. Well, we have a programming note tonight. This is a first for the download. The band tonight, the Oh My's, they canceled.
Yeah.
They were going to have a live performance from a soul band. They had horns and everything, and Bob was here. We were ready to set up. It was going to be a feat, an ambitious feat for the download, as mm-hmm. you've heard some of our music lately. We're stretching the envelope here on Monday nights. Really cool soul band.
Yeah, really great.
That just got their wires crossed.
Yeah, a little miscommunication with management and whatnot. We'll get them back in here. They'll come.
That made me think of Arnie Fufkin from Spinal Tap. I think he wasn't the manager. What was the manager's name who had the... someone texted in who the manager's name was in that, where he's always like, it's not sex, drugs, and roll for me, Ian. You know, I'm trying to find lost luggage. That guy. That's the guy that they want to do the show. You guys are supposed to be there at 9:30. No, I forgot that guy's name. Sir Ian something. I forgot the... It's very good. So that's not happening. But coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour, which I'm very excited, is Paul Rust.
Yeah.
Paul Rust is a lot of... I'm surprised we put it up on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. A lot of response. Paul Rust is the star and the co-creator of the show Love on Netflix, mm-hmm. which I've been binge-watching. Great show with Gillian Jacobs. He co-created with his wife, Leslie Arfin, and took it to Judd Apatow. And Judd Apatow said, hey, man, let's put this on Netflix. Paul Rust is a UCB performer, improviser, sketch comedian. Nice. He does that, but he also had the ability to, or just the good fortune to write on the new Pee Wee Herman movie that's all over Netflix. So he wrote it with Paul Reubens. So imagine, and that was his childhood hero, Pee Wee Herman. Can you imagine that?
I mean, nerve-wracking.
That would be, for me, it'd be like Andy Kaufman.
Intimidating.
Like I just thought the world of what Andy Kaufman did. And I just loved it. And if you had the chance to work with Andy Kaufman on a project.
When he comes back.
Well, he's alive. So it's
yeah,
it's
when he comes back, you can work that out.
You know, he's living in a farmhouse somewhere in Iowa. Yeah, but Paul Rust coming up here after 9 o'clock. Yeah, that's a great show. Love is a great show on Netflix. If you have Netflix, go watch it. We have some really great people that have been on the show. Last week, Martha Kelly. And the guys from Too Much Tuna. This week, Paul Rust. Michael O'Brien is going to be on. He's from Chicago.
Yeah, so exciting.
He was an SNL cast member. He's got his own sort of sketch comedy stand-up album that's out. We'll talk to him. He continues to do the short films for SNL.
Yeah, and those are so, they're so good. They're so weird and interesting. Yeah. And
did you ever see, he did one where they cut it. I think it was with Jim Carrey. It was one of those where they cut it. It didn't make it for time, and then they put it out later. And it was just so goofy with a bunch of kids and, like, zombie kids that were chasing them. It was really, really good. So, but, yeah, Mike would be on. And he's from Chicago. He's an I.O. guy.
Oh.
And there's a lot of mix-up with his name because I know him as Pat. You know, I knew him from Chicago. He'd done stuff with Schadenfreude and then moved on. But he had to change his name to come to Chicago. That was his middle name. So it's Pat O'Brien. And then when he went to New York, there wasn't another Michael O'Brien, so he went back to Michael O'Brien.
Didn't want to be confused with the Pat O'Brien of the sportscaster?
I don't know. I don't even know if that even... That's the other one. It's like to change your name to something everybody knows. But that's, you know, that sportscaster is kind of a different generation, I guess. So anyway, Mike Pat, it's coming up next on Wednesday. We got a lot of great stuff. This is a great week. I mean, we're not on tomorrow. We're not on Friday. But we got some great shows.
Yeah, filling in with good stuff for the 3 days we're here.
That's right. All right, coming up, Paul Rust. We're also going to play the worst. You know what's the worst? Quesalupas. And let me do this. The word quesalupa is the worst. It's a new thing they keep putting on TV on Taco Bell, like on the commercial. I mean, can Taco Bell get any lazier? The idea that they just took like a...
They just they're just putting words together.
They're just making it work. Quesalupa. Yeah. Anyway, we're giving away tickets and pizza. And all that's coming up at 9:30. 312-981-7200.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest, Paul Rust, is having a pretty great year. The actor, writer, comedian, and musician is the star of the Netflix comedy Love, which Rust co-created with Judd Apatow. And he's the co-writer of the new Netflix movie Pee-wee's Big Holiday, featuring, of course, the return of Pee-wee Herman. The Iowa-born Rust can be seen on stage doing stand-up or sketch comedy at the UCB in Los Angeles. And he's my guest tonight on The Download. Paul Rust, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time out.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's great to chat with you.
I've been watching Love. It's such a great show. Where'd the concept come from? Talk a little bit about the origins of Love. That sounded funny.
the concept of Love.
Yeah, just
the origin.
Yeah.
Well, I think it began as a feeling to encourage procreation among human beings, so that our species could continue. The show began. The show's co-created by myself, my wife Leslie Arfin, and Judd Apatow. And it initially started off as Leslie and I pitched a movie that was sort of focused on a couple that is similar to the couple on the show Love. And we gave it to Judd, and he read the sort of outline idea pitch for the movie, and he liked it a lot, but he felt that he liked the characters a lot, but he felt like it would work better as a TV show. Because I think for him, he felt like if we did a movie, we would have to condense and compress a lot of different interesting moments that happen in a relationship in order to fit the running time of a movie. So he suggested, why don't we make it a TV show? So then the three of us wrote a pilot, and then it all started off from there.
Well, it's a really funny show. I mean, it's a comedy, and it explores relationships, like you said. But it's great because it also explores emotions. It almost has a little bit of neurosis to it. It feels a little bit like therapy. Is that a good way to put that?
Yeah, well, it's funny. The creative process behind it and making it, you know, in the writer's room, sometimes being in the writer's room can feel like therapy. And, you know, it's very loosely, you know, based on my life and my experiences. It's more based on my sort of people I know and friends and just observations we've all made or have had. But it is interesting, you know, in the writer's room, somebody will go, you know, my character Gus, they'll say, well, you know, Gus is just this huge wimp. And then I'll be like, well, he has his reasons. I don't know if you can call him a wimp. So, yeah, it can feel like very therapeutic sometimes.
Well, you know, you've had a long list of credits. I mean, you've had on both sides. You've had a long list of credits as an actor, which you also have credits as a writer. But this is really your baby. This is the one where you're the main character. You're the actor and you're writing this and it's, you know, co-creating this project. Do you approach that differently? I mean, do you find yourself doing things differently? How do you sort of put that whole process together, writing and acting the character?
Yeah, you know, I think as a writer, it's not just me. I mean, we have a really amazing staff of writers, and they bring their experiences to the table and, you know, fill out a lot of the characters. So a lot of times, you know, I'm, as an actor, executing something that a notion the writer had. And so sometimes it can feel like, you know, I'm acting in the same way that I had in stuff that I hadn't written. I would say the difference is you know, there's a fair amount of improv on the show, and that's really fun because it feels like I'm combining writing and acting at the same time. You know, I get to portray the character, but at the same time, within the scene with the other actor, we're kind of writing the scene in that moment while we improvise.
Does it help you to come from such a prestigious theater like UCB where you get to perform? I mean, you perform all the time. You're regularly on that stage. Does it help as a writer, as an actor working in television to have that outlet, to be on a stage in front of a live audience weekly?
Yeah, definitely. You know, like if it's the sort of like whatever they say, the 10,000 hours you have to put in or whatever, you know, just doing a weekly improv show in front of a a paying audience that wants to be entertained, it definitely can't help but like sharpen skills, not just for me, but for anybody. You know, the thing that I think maybe I took in particular was there's this improv concept that I believe was born in Chicago, which is like the idea of like doing improv at the top of your intelligence is the phrase they use. And that was a phrase that I brought into the writer's room with the show, which is like the idea behind that is like it's easy to get a laugh by being dumb, but it doesn't really have long legs. After a while, you can only play a dumb character, and an audience actually likes to see somebody behave intelligently, and because then you feel like, oh, you know, so I don't know. I think that was sort of a mantra while we were writing the show, is making sure that the characters weren't behaving stupidly, that they did have some sort of emotional intelligence or awareness about themselves.
Yeah, I think it plays because there's a lot in the show where you kind of feel like you're getting the archetype. Early on in the show, you're like, well, this is a guy who's broken up with his girlfriend, and now he's going to, you know, droop his way through the world. But but as the show moves on, I mean, you do stress the relationships between you and Gillian Jacobs, but the idea of the nice guy, you know, that Gus is the nice guy. And then later in the series, you know, you challenge that notion. What is a nice guy? Gillian kind of calls that out. Talk about that, because it does feel like you guys are taking a much more dynamic, at least from an emotional standpoint, arc to these characters.
Oh, well, that's a really nice thing to say. So first of all, thank you. I appreciate that. That's very kind. Yeah. You know, I think for us, it was important that it could easily be the story of, well, this girl's wild and this guy's a dork, and the love of a good guy, then her life would be better. And, you know, I think that's not a notion any of us who created the show or write the show or work on the show, Gillian included, really I buy that. And so the exciting thing, and, you know, this, I guess, speaks to the thing that Judd was going after, which is a TV show. You can spend a little bit more time exploring the characters. We had fun that in the back half of the season, you start to realize that this girl who seems sort of tough on the exterior actually has a center that's, or her, you know, insides are much softer and sweeter. And this guy who presents himself as this nice sort of non-threatening, harmless guy actually has a well of rage inside him.
Well, I'm curious, you know, this is just a more of a question about the industry. You know, with Netflix coming on board, and you work a lot with Netflix, and you were working as a story editor and a writer on Arrested Development as well. You know, you're seeing a different way that television is produced, or at least presented. All episodes are available at the same time. For you as a writer, and you've worked in both experiences because you worked on Human Giant, where it's, you know, episode to episode every week it comes out, versus everything being available at once. Does that change at all the way that you approach the arcs or the stories involved in a show like Love?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, that became the exciting thing, is sort of embracing what, not to get too highfalutin, but really does feel kind of like a new way of telling a story that maybe you hadn't been able to before, which is, you know, I certainly, when I was writing on that fourth season of Arrested Development on Netflix, that's the thing that I was always really just so excited to come to work today, every day, was like, oh, we get to tell a story that's sort of complex and requires you to have to watch every episode for it to paint a picture. Same goes with Love. I think if we had done it as a show, I mean, we really did think of it as a 5-hour movie. Certainly, we wanted to make sure that each individual episode felt like it had a beginning, middle, and end, and was its own episode, that if you just watched it on its own, it would be satisfying. But being able to kind of, I guess, tell one story all the way through, if it had been, I guess, distributed in another way, which is week to week, we probably wouldn't have been as patient as we are with the two, with Gus and Mickey getting together, because there'd just be a reasonable concern of like, well, are people going to want to tune in 7 days later if this couple isn't right. together by the right. second episode?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, it's sort of like television is changing in that way. You know, what's really interesting is, I mean, this project obviously is your child. But the other project that just came out, the Pee-wee's Big Holiday, The Return of Pee-wee Herman, you're a co-writer with Paul Reubens on this. Talk about that experience. I mean, I know that you grew up with Pee-wee, as we all did. What was that like getting a chance to actually write a Pee-wee movie with Pee-wee Herman?
It's funny that you say love is a child of mine because Pee-wee is a product of my childhood.
Yeah,
when I was a kid, it was an obsession. I was known as the Pee-wee kid in my town. I would dress up as him. My mom mailed me the red bow tie that she made for me when I was 10. So I loved him. And, you know, not just when I was a kid, but growing up through high school, college, post-college, moving out to L.A., if anybody ever asked me what my favorite comedy was, it's Pee-wee's Big Adventure. I just think it's like a perfect film. And so getting to co-write this new Pee-wee Herman movie with Paul Reubens, who created the character, was, I wouldn't say it's a dream come true because I didn't even conceive of it as a possibility. It was just a high point creatively and just in life. You know, the fact that now I can consider Paul Reubens a close personal friend is actually the thing that makes me really happy.
You've written a lot, and you mentioned Arrested Development. You worked with Judd Apatow. There's a lot of people that you've written with and written for. This had to be interesting because you're writing essentially for a character, a legendary character, with the character. I mean, talk about what you learned in that experience as a writer.
Well, before I started working on this, I would try to write something Pee-wee-esque, and it was a Pee-wee-style screenplay, and I could never get past 10 pages because I was just like, this doesn't feel right. It's just not firing on all cylinders. And then when I started working with Paul, I was like, oh, that's the secret. You work with a genius. That's how you write a script like that. You know, I considered it just a huge benefit that I was collaborating with the person who, you know, was the original person to dream all this stuff up. I think, you know, it wasn't like the sort of thing that certainly there's a lot of reboots and remakes and reimaginings that happen. But it's actually fairly rare that the person who originally created whatever it is working on it. And so I just consider that like a tremendous benefit that I had the opportunity to have Paul as the captain of the ship. And really my job was just making sure that I was following Paul's lead and executing his vision, because obviously he knew more than anybody else what's great for the character.
Well, the movie is Pee-wee's Big Holiday. It's on Netflix. It's streaming now. Also, the show, the comedy Love, which Paul Russ created with his wife, Leslie Arfin, and Judd Apatow, is also on demand through Netflix. Paul, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us tonight. Paul Russ, L.A.-based writer, actor, comedian, and musician. We can't leave out musician. Killing it with Jet on the show.
Great. Oh, thanks.
Thanks for talking with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin, and it was a great chat with you.
It's Download here.
Love, love, love will tear us apart.
There you go, little Joy Division. Is that Joy Division? Yeah, Pete Zim bringing out the Beats by Zim. A little Joy Division playing on the Love. That's a great show. If you're watching the show, and a lot of people are, they text in and talked about it, saying they love the show on Facebook. It really is. The show Love on Netflix is worth a look. You watch it?
I do, yeah. Like it a lot. I don't find that I watch anything on the net on like 2, 5, 7, 9, 5. You know, I guess The Good Wife, but not that I don't like the shows. I just automatically I think it's bad.
when right. somebody says, "Oh yeah, it's on ABC on Wednesday nights," I'm like, "Nah, price stinks."
You know, it has a lot to do with, in my mind, we kind of talked about this at one point, but the idea of like with Baskets on FX, Zach Galifianakis is this quality talent that we pay money at the theater for. Mm-hmm. So we pay $14, $13, $12 to go see him in The Hangover, whatever it is. And so for him to bring a show to cable, you know, it's a treat.
Yeah.
And I see the same with Love. I mean, this is a Judd Apatow joint. You mm-hmm. know, Judd Apatow does a million movies. I mean, everything from, you know, the Amy Schumer movie to Knocked Up to the movies of all the stuff that you see with essentially anything Seth Rogen's in. So, yeah. And so for them to make a show to put on Netflix that includes a lot of the same players, a lot of the cameos by great LA performers and stand-ups and comedians. I mean, mm-hmm. you see everyone from Ian Roberts at the Upright Citizens Brigade to, I forgot his name, but the guy who works a door at the Magic Place is one of the cast members for Mr. Show. You know, like, there's just like a really great, and there's something really beloved about that, especially when you kind of think of the community that surrounds that. So yeah. It's a lot of the same comics with the same sensibilities.
Our friend Cal Kinane, who's been on the show.
Yeah, that's right.
Prominent role.
So it's fun. I mean, I think when we had Dan Harmon on, we talked about this, you know, about the concept of the golden age of television and how Netflix is going to let people like Judd Apatow or Harmon or others really be able to do what they've always been doing, but do it more. It may not help younger writers. In this case, it did, you know, because Judd brought, you know, Paul Rust with him. But the idea that it might not help younger because there's not a lot of money in it. But once these guys get to the point where they're not that considered, you know, Judd Apatow may not need the money to do that. And so he's like, let's do it this way. And yeah. we as the consumer benefit from that.
We had this discussion over the weekend in that we saw the new movie Hello, My Name is Doris with Sally Field. It was pretty good. But coming off like watching like Love or things on like Baskets, we find that like we're enjoying this new era of TV more than at the film now.
Yeah.
Where film was always seen as the, you know, TV was like the redheaded stepchild. No offense to redheads out there. But you know what I mean? But now it's like it's on equal footing, and now we find ourselves watching TV.
Yeah,
more.
I mean, it's great. I mean, it's from shows like Transparent on Amazon to Love on Netflix to the shows on FX right now, which are great. I mean, the OJ show is tremendous. I had a great experience this weekend. I was talking to a relative at Easter. You know, you're not supposed to talk about politics, mm-hmm. and Trump came up. You're not supposed to talk about religion, and I kind of was funny. I was at the table. I kind of said something. I'm like, yeah, it was easy to get out of church, huh? I didn't have to go to church this morning, and everyone just got real quiet. I'm like, oh, I didn't mean anything. I didn't disparage your religion. And then the third should be OJ. Like the third thing you shouldn't talk about. Because she was like, do you watch this show? And I'm like, no. I'm like, do you watch the OJ show on FX? And she's like, no. I'm like, it's John Travolta. It's Cuba Gooding Jr. It's about the OJ. And she's like, well, I know how that turned out. I'm like, they're not acting like you don't.
Yeah.
They're just replaying it. They're dramatizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really funny moment where, and it was just funny where I said something like, they're really good at they're really good at not playing their cards. Like if OJ did it or didn't, like they don't really reveal it. And she goes, well, I know he did it. And I was like, it's just a TV show, man. And then I made it very clear. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I just want to make it clear. I'm not pro OJ.
Yeah.
I'm pro the OJ show.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm not watching it anymore. No, I mean, there's only like 3 episodes left. I wonder what's going to happen. All right, coming up, we're going to play the worst. Stay with us.
What's going down, y'all? The worst, my peoples come first. When worst come the worst. When worst come the worst, my peoples come first. When worst come the worst. When worst come the worst, my peoples come first. I got worldwide family all over the earth.
All right, we know that song. It means it's time for the worst. Play the worst every Monday here on The Download. If you're a regular listener, you know the segment. This is where we collectively bemoan and complain about the worst things ever. You know what's the worst? The word quesalupa. I just, I don't know. I can't get off of that. Like, I saw a big sign this weekend that was like, try the new quesalupa. No. You're lazy. That's lazy. You're just making up words now. You're taking two things that you made up before, in case, obviously, but and completely, I mean, the marketing people just, that's the worst. Sorry.
Isn't that all of Mexican food, though?
Like, no.
It's a different type of tortilla, a different type of meat.
No, because I feel like Taco Bell takes it to a whole nother level.
Well, they not only, they make the food up, so they have to make up the names. Because exactly. If it didn't exist before they created it, there wouldn't be a name for it. So they have to do both.
I'm learning here. I'm sure you have some choice. Hashtag the worst for us tonight. You know what? You can go to 312-981-7200. The line's already lighting up. Or, of course, you can go on Twitter. You can text or call 312-981-7200. We got great stuff to give away tonight. The best, hashtag the worst, tonight. We'll get a pair of tickets to Sensory Overload at the Montgomery Club on April 14th. It's a unique three-hour foodie adventure that includes the five senses and explores Chicago's culinary scene. Get tickets and details at chicagotribune.com/sensoryoverload. And we've got Lou Malnati's Pizzas in studio with us tonight. We've got our panelist. Soli Santos is a stand-up comedian and ensemble member with the Cates, a great group of women who perform at the Laugh Factory and up at the Bookseller in Lincoln Square.
Hello, hello.
The Cates are going to be performing on April 7th at Laugh Factory. Soli, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And our return, I wouldn't say champion, but return panelist.
Thanks.
Elizabeth Gomez. Elizabeth, of course, is a performer, stand-up storyteller here. She's with the ensemble Drinkers with Writing Problems. Is that right?
You got it right this time.
And she also performs with the Cates, and she will be performing on April 7th as well. Good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Excited to be here.
All right. So let's get to it. Pete Zimmerman's here, of course, as well. So why don't we go right to the panel? Elizabeth, why don't you kick it off tonight? Why don't you start with the worst?
So I recently got a dog, and what I found out is the worst
Pete likes
is
that. He's clapping. He likes that.
Dog farts. Dog farts are the worst. They're the worst. You can never tell that they're coming on. They never smell quite human.
Oh, jeez. I love that's where you start. That's where we end in this. It
devolves. Oh, I got more. It gets worse.
It devolves.
She's like a 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Basically.
Absolutely. But okay, so.
But the opposite of that is when you fart and then the dog is scared. So that's fun. That's the fun part.
Is that payback? That's payback.
Totally like payback.
Okay, good to know. There we go. We got it's a good combo. Elizabeth starts us off strong.
Thank you.
I don't
have
pets, you know, that's kind of like flashbacks of my three brothers growing up with three boys in the house. Because you know what the worst is watching television when one of your brothers stands in front of you and puts his butt in your face and then farts. That's the worst.
I love this is where we started.
Because we're a couple of 12-year-old junior high boys.
Yeah, I love it. I love
inside the bodies of grown women.
All right. I will, let's see what I can do here. You know what's the worst is... And I made the mistake of doing this. Reading the ingredients on the back of the Easter egg dye.
Oh, why would you do that?
Why would you do that? I'm like, oh, what's? I wonder what they put in this. I wonder this PAS, the PAAS. Oh, I wonder
what does it
this.
Even stand for? PAS.
I don't know what it stands for, but it's there's a lot of chemicals that go into that orange dye that you just dropped your food
particular
into.
Particular.
Yeah, my son said to me, he goes, I go, hey, do you want an egg? And he goes, why would I want an egg with chemicals on it? And I'm like, good point. You really nailed it there. I was like, that's actually a good point. Pete Zimmerman, we welcome Pete Zimmerman. How are you, buddy?
I'm wonderful.
All right, this is your game, man. You love this game.
I do love
all
this
week.
Game.
You're waiting for this. All right, what do you got?
I'm going to go with, boy, I have so many. When you're grocery shopping and you get in line and you're waiting for the person in front of you to finish, that they don't slap back the little separator thing, you know, the little so you're just sitting there with your groceries piling up trying to keep them separate from the other person, and you can't reach it, but they refuse to like knock it back. Those people are the worst.
There's a lot, you know, I've noticed in doing the worst in the last couple weeks, grocery store etiquette is really at the top. I mean, really, people get so upset, and there's a lot of problems with the grocery store etiquette.
I don't that little separator that you're talking about. Sometimes I like to just put my product over on their side, just to like see how they
scam
react.
People to see if they pay for your product.
No, just to see their reactions because people get very upset about it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So if you like put your can of soup just over the divider,
you're breaking the social contract.
Yeah, and then they will grab it and then like toss it back because anger.
Because the implication is you're trying to sneak your stuff over so that they pay for your stuff. Yes.
Is that what they think? You think?
Yeah, absolutely. Because
I'm always like, "Oh, you made a mistake."
You should. So naive. You should have a photographer with you, and you should take pictures of their initial angry reaction and make a coffee book out of it.
That should be my, or my new YouTube station.
Yeah, right.
Angry people in the grocery line.
Ooh, ooh.
All right, 312-981-7200. The number 312-981-7200. Let's go to the text. 847 says, you know what's the worst? When Rom somehow gets a win. I guess they're talking about the Top Cop story that was in the Sun-Times today. That was Ben from Arlington Heights. 847 says, when the car in front of you doesn't pull up far enough to trigger the left turn arrow.
Oh, that is the worst.
Right?
Oh, this just gave me flashbacks.
But I feel like living in the city, that's a myth. Like, the arrow's going to go no matter what.
No, actually, I ride motorcycle. So,
you do?
Yeah, so if the bike doesn't run over that, you can sit there at the light forever and almost like praying for a car to come so that they'll... You know, so right?
It's,
yes,
yeah, it's like doing the weight. Or something.
Yes,
like that.
Exactly.
Really?
Yeah, that's a problem.
I expect a lot of motorcycle etiquette. The worst tonight from you, Soli.
What's the worst when you don't wear your helmet and like bugs get in your eyes?
The worst is not wearing a helmet and then not putting my hair in a bun because then when I take it out, it's like a big ratty net. Like nest because of all the winds blowing.
There's like just, birds in it.
Yeah. Yes. I found eggs. I've found creatures that I didn't know. But then again, I wash my hair once a year. So maybe that's the problem.
That's like
a beauty tip, though.
Only 4 hour or four times a year.
Yeah. Well, the beauty tip is that you shouldn't wash your hair every day. I mean, you must understand this.
I don't have any hair. I would say one of my worst is, this is embarrassing, but not really. I'm bald, and I still find myself having dandruff.
Ooh.
Can
you olive oil that?
Well,
maybe.
That up, I think.
Dandruff is just dry skin under your hair.
I know.
So now... So
it
you
makes
just,
sense.
Are you lotioning?
I'm not doing anything.
Well,
you
then
don't
that's
do anything.
Why...
I'm not lotioning my head.
How about
head.
Coconut oil?
I'm not coconut oiling anything. What I do is, like, I am taking... The one thing that you get from being bald is low maintenance. Like, I don't do anything. I let the water hit my head... And that's it. I don't have to ever do anything.
No,
ever
now
again.
You have to add coconut
no,
oil.
No, I'm not doing
you
it.
You have to. That's
this
the way it goes.
This is my right as a bald man. I will not. I'm
not standing for this in your dandruffy shoulders. No
so
one
you don't, you don't so put weird. Sunscreen on in the summertime?
In the summer, you have to. The sunscreen, I will. But what?
I thought the sweater you were wearing was like gradiated from white to black, but it's just your bald head all over your shoulders. Disgusting. Justin Kaufman.
It really is. I mean, it's hilarious because I'm like, oh, my God. Whatever. All right. Well, now I know I need to lotion up my head.
No, let's keep talking about your head.
No, yeah. please.
Dandruff on a bald head. That's the worst.
It
that's
is the worst. Worst. That's the worst.
The worst.
All right. 312-981-7200. We got some people on the line. Let's take a quick break so we stay on target here. We'll come back and we will hear from you on the download. It's the worst.
What's going down,
y'all? It's the worst here on the download. Elizabeth Gomez and Soli Santos are in studio with me, and they are our panelists. They're both performing on April 7th at the Laugh Factory as part of the Kate Show. You can see them there. Coming up, we've got, on a programming note, I had said the band The Oh My's were going to be here, and then they called and said, no, we're not.
What? Why?
They said they had a mix-up with their management.
They don't have a Google Calendar?
That might be the problem. Maybe they were using Yahoo and they're like, oh man, Yahoo's it fell apart. I don't know.
They're still using like a paper calendar that they have to flip.
I think what would have happened.
They're not turning it.
Pete can attest, but I think if we didn't like start to promote it on social media, you know, like I put it on Twitter and Facebook, all that stuff, and then I think they saw it and they're like, oh, what? We're supposed to be on the radio tonight? They probably just wouldn't have shown up, right?
Well, can you call Air Supply?
We could call Air Supply. We could do it over the phone.
They have nothing going on tonight.
That's right. Tonight, we don't have the Air Supply tickets. Tonight, we have a pair of tickets to Sensory Overload at the Montgomery Club. I'm not even sure where the Montgomery Club is, but it's an April 14th, a unique three-hour foodie adventure that indulges the five senses and explores Chicago's culinary scene. Get tickets and details at chicagotribune.com / sensory overload. What happened there? All right, so let's keep going. What do you got, Elizabeth?
I think people who name their kids after cities like Denver or Brooklyn or Austin are the worst.
Yes, I'm with you there.
Like, why don't they name them after fun cities like Winnetka?
Exactly. Yeah.
Winnetka Gomez. That's going to be the next kid I have.
Tallahassee, come inside. It's time for dinner. That could be good. San Diego would be a great name.
San Diego. I grew up in a town called Fort Dix.
Fort Dix?
Yeah. No. I seriously was born in a town called Fort Dix. So
Fort Dix. I believe you.
Fort Dix.
What's your middle name? All right.
It's, keep it clean, Kaufman. Keep it,
I was just going to say, just, please don't answer that question. Yeah.
All right, right, Sully, what do you got?
Well, to take off of that, you know what's the worst is when they name all their kids the same name but different versions, like Brian and then Brianna. Like they start making up names,
yeah,
but they're all named after the dad, Brian. Like, or they name their kids all alcoholic beverages.
My friend is currently like naming daiquiri? All his cats that way.
Really?
Yeah, Lillet and Cointreau. Shout out, Pat.
That's good names for cats.
Not really.
No?
Oh.
All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Ray. Ray, welcome to the worst. What do you got?
All right, so I'm an elementary music teacher, and I have kids dancing around the room all the time.
Okay.
The worst is one time I had a kid go number two and decided to leave little Hershey kisses all over my music carpet.
Oh, man.
That's gross.
Oh, keeping hold for that
there's,
one.
There's
yeah.
no way to get around that
there's,
one.
There's, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
Oh, that's gross.
Did you eat them? I love Hershey kisses.
No. Is that how you found out?
Come on.
It was like Groundhog Day?
Yeah.
The chocolate in the pool?
847 says the worst is when you drive around to get your kid to fall asleep and then you hit a pothole on the way home after they do and they wake up. Mm. Although it just says dot dot dot, so maybe they did stay to sleep. I don't know what the deal was there. The worst is when someone says, can I get a 312 when ordering a beer? So 312.
I don't like that one.
708 says when you can't find your windshield snow scraper, so you have to use your credit card. You like that one.
I've done that one.
You've done that one?
I've also tried to use like my coat, which does not take off ice.
Oh, no. Why would you do that? No.
That's all you
have,
right?
If you're desperate, you have like no choice.
Oh, no.
815 says the dumb feeling you get when you instinctively use your car remote to try and unlock your front door. That is. 773 says anything fruit punch flavored. That is true. Fruit punch flavor is kind of gross. You know, you like it? Your Hawaiian punch?
I don't know if I like it, but I definitely don't think it's the worst.
Okay.
I think the worst flavor is probably anything that's bubble gum.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I hate bubble gum.
No.
I have a hard time with watermelon.
Oh,
no.
Like the flavor. Yeah, I can't
no.
do it.
She's a 12-year-old boy.
I
she
am.
Loves all that stuff.
No, I don't. I love it.
Yeah.
Anything cherries gross.
Cherries. Oh, no. See?
No,
oh,
see?
Oh, no. Cherry I'll go with. I'll always default
How
to
How do we
cherry.
Feel about grape?
Okay, we found a good middle ground there. We're both like, mm-hmm.
All right, 262's got the worst is when your FM receiver breaks in your car and all you have to listen to is AM.
Oh, yeah, that is horrible.
Does that happen?
Yes.
Did someone? How do you break an FM receiver? Is that just a sly nod to the fact they're listening to AM radio right now?
Also, who still listens to radio?
There's probably a couple people who might tell you they do since they're listening to this segment right now. All right, Zim, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What do you got, Pete?
I'm going to go with, since you mentioned, you know, being bald, I'm going to go with another hair-related thing.
Okay.
I recently got a haircut. And
looks good.
Thank you. Yeah. But you know what's the worst? When somebody comes up to you and says, hey, you got a haircut. You're waiting for the, you know, you're waiting for the compliment. Like,
yeah.
Oh, it looks good.
Yeah.
But now, yeah, I know I got a haircut. But
do you default to you got a haircut? That looks good. I mean, that's the default, right? No one ever thinks that you got a bad haircut.
Right? Some people are like, oh, you got a haircut. I liked it the other way.
People say that? Is that something you say? I have a feeling that's something you would say.
I could totally see that. Yeah. I could totally see you say
I would probably to a man because they don't know anything about haircuts. Look at your haircuts right now.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess I wasn't expecting a compliment, but I would like some sort of reaction other than noticing. You can tell me it's bad.
What if they're like, oh, you got a haircut. Here's a piece of gum.
I would take that.
Yeah, that'd be better. Yeah. 773 says the worst is when you go down the cereal aisle and see two confused old ladies blocking aisle traffic. Again, yeah.
No. It's why are we picking on old ladies?
I was just going to say that just seems really...
Yeah, it could have been. It doesn't really even need to be old ladies. Anyone could block the aisle traffic at a grocery store, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Children. Children block the aisles all the time. And they're the worst.
I was just going to say, you know, the worst are children.
I love the panel tonight. You guys are...
Because, like, you can't like, push them out of the way without, like, people getting upset.
Yeah, people will watch you, and they'll see you and tell authorities and things like that.
If you push them out to get some cereal.
But I feel like if you did that to an old person, you could just fake it and be like, oh, she fell.
Yeah.
Something happened to her head.
And if she said, and if she denied it, it would be just like, we could blame it on dementia and other things.
Like, she doesn't know. She doesn't know.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll continue. It's the worst on the download. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. We're playing the worst here on the download. Let's go to the callers. Caller, you're on the air. What's the worst? There you go. Can you hear me? I don't have your name. That's the problem.
Oh, yeah, I hear you.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Hi, how you doing? What's your name?
John Durack.
John, okay. John, where are you from?
I'm from Chicago.
All right, great. Okay, John from Chicago. John, what's the worst?
It's when you're in the grocery store, and so there's one person in the line before you, and they have one item, and it takes them about 30 minutes to ring it up.
That is pretty bad.
That is pretty bad. Thanks, John. Thanks for that.
They got to write a check. That's when it's the worst, one item, and they have to write a check for it.
Or they say...
And then the check bounces.
They say, that was 39 cents. And then the person goes, really? And then usually you can get away with the person go, oh, they'll just put in 39 cents. But then there's the sticklers who are like, well, I got to go check that.
Yes.
That's what's holding it up, right?
How about when you leave that line and you go to the next line and think it's going to be faster?
And it's not. It turns out to be worse.
I would say my grocery store worst is the self-checkout lanes, the lines for them. You know, because if you get a long line going on those things, or even like this happens at Mariano's a lot, where then the line, there's actually a line of people down the aisle, and you don't know where the line starts or ends, and you're not sure where to go stand, so you inevitably cut in front of somebody, and you become the worst.
Like, so I was just going to say, so you're the worst.
I'm the worst.
But when the lines are long, though, you can just get a drink at Mariano's. Like, right? You
can get
a drink and just
drink some appetizers.
That's pretty easy. Right. Yeah, that's not so bad.
It's going down,
It's the worst here on the download. 312-981-7200. Playing the worst. It's Mondays. Every Monday here on the download. Elizabeth Gomez, Soli Santos, two stand-up comedians with the ensemble The Cates, which great ensemble. You guys are killing it. You got a big show on April 7th at Laugh Factory, plus some other shows we'll get into after the next break. What do you got?
No, I was going to say that we're at the Laugh Factory every first Thursday of the month, and then the second Fridays and last Saturdays at the Bookseller down Lincoln Square. It's super awesome.
Easy to remember.
And then on Tuesdays at 4.
Let's keep going with that. I got the full lineup of calls, so let's get to Bill. Bill, welcome to the show. Bill, where are you from?
Bartlett.
All right. Bill from Bartlett. What's the worst?
Okay, you get in an elevator.
Uh-huh.
Your appointment's on the seventh floor. You get in on the ground floor. The door's ready to close, and all of a sudden the mother jumps in with three kids. And these kids, they attack every single button. They hit one all the way up to 10, and it closes, and now you're pissed. and they get off at floor number two, and you got to sit there.
That really happened to you, Bill?
Yes, it did. It happened a couple of times.
As a mother of two children, I would recommend a solution. I would when the kids aren't looking, what you have to do is hit the emergency stop button and start screaming. just like, oh my God, we're stuck, we're all gonna die. And then the kids will totally calm down.
All I said was, really, Mom? And that was it. She turned around and they got off on the very next floor, the second floor.
Well, there you go.
What
are you gonna do? All right, Bill, thanks for that. Let's continue. Let's go to Scott. Scott, welcome to The Worst. Scott, where are you from?
Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. That's where you're at right now?
Yep. Yeah, I just turned on the radio and, like, this channel I've never heard before, and I hear you guys are in Chicago. I was like, okay, there we go.
All right, Scott. Well, great. You can play this as a time-honored tradition in Chicago, The Worst. What's the worst, Scott?
All right, the worst is when you're at a convenience store, you're late for work, and the jackass in front of you, and when there's only one line open, all he's buying is lottery tickets.
Oh, you're right.
And then he's got to turn around and tell you why his numbers are so lucky.
Do people do that? They're like, yeah, I got really lucky numbers. Thanks for sharing. That's
right,
crazy.
Thanks.
All right, thanks, Scott. Thank you. Wow, how about that? All right, we'll take that.
Yeah, I like that one. I also wondered what Scott's best story he got out of those. Like, who turned around and was like, these are my lucky numbers because.
It's funny because I didn't even think about that at all. All I thought
I know,
about
you're
was
the
like,
worst.
No, I thought in my
I
head, I'm like, how great
either.
Would it be to just be like, have a radio station pop up that you never heard before?
Yeah.
Like, that's all I was thinking about. I'm like, that must be so great to be like, I guess I'll just hit scan. And then this show's on. You're like, wow.
And then he calls in. That's
hey,
awesome.
I'm going to call in, man. Let's go to Rich. Rich, welcome to the show. Rich, where are you from?
I'm from Rochelle.
Rich from Rochelle. All right, Rich, what's the worst?
When you go to a big department store that's based out of Arkansas and there's 25 checkout lines and the only thing that's open is the four self-checkouts.
Yeah. That's the worst.
Yeah, we were just talking about that on the break.
And you know they're closing 400 stores, so there's going to be 10 cashiers out of work here shortly.
Yeah, 10 cashiers. That's a good point.
Way to bring it down, man. Way to bring it
Rich.
Down.
Thanks for that. That's true.
Way to make us all sad for some Walmart workers.
Well, that's a good little riff on automation there. Way to go, Rich. All right, let's see what I got on the text. All right, 630 says, the worst is the plastic film used to seal everything from lipstick to wine. Try getting that off or getting any item out of a plastic bubble like toy, hardware, etc. I guess you're right. Like the wine.
Those are really hard to get.
They are.
Yeah, you need scissors. You could cut yourself with those with the plastic. It could be that could be dangerous.
Okay, there you go. Let's see. Let's go to 331. The worst is when parents let their kids run wild around a restaurant while they enjoy a peaceful, civilized meal, and then their kids decide to have a seat at my table.
I think this goes back to the theme of, like, the kids are being, they're the worst.
Yeah, there really is. Like, I think you said it. Yeah. You guys both said it by saying, kids are the worst. And they're like, oh, their eyes got big. They're like, I'm going to call in with my kid's story.
I'm sure there are so many stories about kids. Like, when they, like, pick their nose in front of you and then, like, wipe it on your dress. Like, that's the worst. That's happened to me.
Like, someone not your kids?
My kid. Because they're gross. They're like...
They have
blobby things that like do things that destroy everything. That was completely a terrible sentence. It was the worst sentence I've ever had.
You know what's the worst is having a little kid run up to you when you see their nose is filled with boogers and then they hug your leg and then they wipe their face on your pants.
Yeah.
Gross.
I am speaking from experience.
Says going to the public washroom stall in the winter and the coat hook is missing. Broken off, etc. Real pet peeve. That's what the person said. Real pet peeve. All right. I love the panel tonight. It's just like cold. They're not going to interact. Both of you are not interacting unless you like the worst. You're just like, that doesn't, no, I don't care.
Like, nah, skip it.
That was.
Well, we're selecting a winner. We're like,
all right, I like it. Yeah, you don't have to be so harsh. All right, let's try Bill. Hey, Bill, where are you from, Bill?
I'm from Addison.
Bill from Addison. All right, what's the worst, Bill?
The worst is when you go to a deli and you buy lunch,
and you take a drink of out of your chocolate milk, and it's cottage cheese.
No.
Oh, gross.
No. No.
That happened to you for real?
Yes, it did. Oh.
So, like, they filled it like it was chocolate?
I threw everything out. I couldn't eat.
Yeah, but what, I mean, did it look like chocolate milk?
It was chocolate milk, but it was spoiled.
Oh, gross.
Oh. Yeah.
All right. I think that might be
it. I took a big slug of it, and I lost my lunch.
Oh. All right. Hold on, Bill. That's gross.
I also like how he's an adult who still drinks chocolate milk.
Yeah. It is a deli, I guess. All right. We'll take a break. We come back. We'll continue the worst here. 312-981-7200. With Elizabeth and Soli, and we will also get some winners here and give away these tickets to the Chicago Tribune event, culinary event, and the two runners-up get a pizza from Lou Malnati's. It's the worst. Stay with us. All right, it's the worst here on the download on WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest tonight in studio, Elizabeth Gomez, Soli Santos. We're talking, we're doing the worst. They're our panel tonight. They're both stand-up comedians. Elizabeth, you're going to be at the April 7th show. Do you have shows before that? Because the last time you were here, you rattled off like 42 shows in 6 days.
Yeah, you know, I have some shows that I do on the regular, which is the Drinkers with Writing Problems. We have a live lit show.
Yeah, I saw that in the DM info. Congrats on that.
Thank you. Last Fridays of the month at Briscoe's Bistro. We also do the Laugh Factory and the Kate stuff. And then I also have become the associate producer for Story Club Southside.
Oh, okay.
So that happens, I think, the second Tuesday of them. Oh, shoot.
So many,
I'm the worst
so many
producer.
Second Tuesdays. So many second Tuesdays.
Soli, so many dates.
Soli, what do you got?
I will be at the Diversity River Bowl. Every other week we have a show called The Comedy Bowl. Mona Abramishan hosts that. I will be
So people
hosting.
Bowl and then listen to stand-up?
No, actually there is a separate room for the show. Oh, okay. So there's okay. people that are bowling and then there's a separate spot for the show, actually. So I will be hosting April 5th for Mona's birthday bash.
Okay, there. Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So... 312-981-7200. Let's keep it going. We're gonna pick the winners coming up here in about 5 minutes. So get in now if you can. Sarah, welcome to the download. Where are you from, Sarah?
Carrie.
Sarah from Carrie. I love it. All right, Sarah. What's the worst?
Well, living in the suburb, the worst is when you go through your whole house, you think it's garbage day. And you, like, purge everything, clean the cat litter. It's this big thing. Mm-hmm. And then you drag your trash cans, your recycle, everything to the end of the street. And it's the wrong day. And so it's just like your garbage cans are out there. And everybody, I live on a busy street. Everybody's like, what's going on there? Like, okay.
Everybody's judging you.
Yeah, you look so silly. Like everybody knows that, oh, what was she thinking or... Somebody messed up, yeah. So that's the worst for me.
All right, I like that. Thanks, Sarah. Thank you for that.
But crazy. like the best is that she gets garbage service.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Hello,
yeah.
Like we're Chicago residents. It's rare when we get it on time, if at all.
But I would say it is nice that I mean she got it done.
Yeah.
So it's just got to be out there for a day.
Yeah, she's super organized.
It's organized. That's good. All right. 312 says the worst is when you're driving to work and a train gets in the way, stalls traffic, and then it stops. And doesn't move. That happens much more frequently on Grand yes. Avenue, right here where the Freedom Center is for the Tribune, where the river's at. There's like a little train track right there. It's very little. That just the train likes to move and block traffic for like 2 seconds, stay there for like 10 minutes, and then back up.
Like it's not going anywhere. It's just going anywhere. Back and forth.
Yeah, it's just like we just need to stretch. I think the train needs
like
a stretch.
Like three train cars connected and they just go back and forth. Yeah. Let's screw with it. Let's see how many people we can get angry today in the city of Chicago.
I think that might be the reason. So like I'm getting closer to the point where I'm just like, I think I need to find out what's going on with that train.
You do that,
like
Justin.
An investigative report on that train. All right, what else have we got here? We've got, let's see. A lot of the same text over and over and over. So thank you for that. 815 says going into the only stall available in the restroom and finding out the seat is gone from the toilet. Oh boy.
Oh, for ladies, it's when you have to go to the only stall and you find out that someone has totally peed all over the seats.
Oh, yeah.
Because for some reason, women love to like tinkle on the toilet seats.
It's like
gross.
A thing. Yeah,
I think it's backsplash, like because they hover over it and then it splashes onto the seat and then they don't clean it up.
Yeah, maybe. But I think it's probably mostly pee.
That could be your investigative
well,
report.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You guys do that one. I'll do
Soli
the train
Santos
one.
And Elizabeth Gomez reporting yeah. from the WGN public toilet.
Yes.
When you tell someone that you're in pharmacy school and they act like you're going to be independently wealthy, I don't know what someone sounds very specific.
I was very
yeah,
specific.
Yeah, like mad about something.
Yeah, P.S. Good for you for having a nice job.
I think that's what the point was. On
I,
that, yeah.
I think what they're saying is they're going to end up with a lot of school debt. Like, and so yeah, they won't right. be as it won't be as lucrative for a little bit.
I missed this one and I just want to get there. I can't find it. I'm telling you. I wanted to get to the dude from Homewood. No, I can't find it. I'll find it. There's just someone has decided that it'd be a lot of fun to text the same text over and over and over like 400 times to the text line. So it just makes everything spread out. So I really appreciate it. You're a star. You're a star. You got mentioned on the radio. Congrats.
I was just going to say, I think that was to ensure that they got...
Yeah, they got mentioned.
Yeah, and they succeeded.
They did. Yeah, they did, didn't they? Here it is. 708 says, the worst is pulling into a grocery store parking lot, the Jewel, and every lane I pull into park, I'm driving against the flow of traffic, and the parking spaces are angled towards me, and I turn into another lane row of spaces, and the same thing happens again.
That happens to me all the time.
That is the worst. You're right. That actually is maybe perfect. That's the perfect, the worst, because it's happened to all of us, and it's on you. It's not somebody else screwed you over. You just went down the wrong. And you're
yeah.
Like, oh,
and
man.
Then everybody gives you dirty looks. They're like, you're a jerk. It's like, I'm sorry.
All right, let's keep going. Maybe we keep going on the line. Let's go to Dave. Dave, I'm going to try to get all of you. Dave from Uptown. Welcome
hey.
To the show. Dave, what's the worst?
Well, let's say you're on a really long escalator. I mean, nowadays they're like a mile high, like the one above Marshall's going to TJ Maxx.
Yeah, right.
And you get a group of people ahead of you, and they just stand there. You know, I mean, you want to, like, you know, sometimes if you have enough courage, you start eyeballing them. You move right in back of them, and you get the excuse me, and then they'll move to the side and let you go, you know. But sometimes they don't hear you if you got your their earphones in. So you got to stand there and just plod along.
Yeah. That's a good one,
I'm interested
Dave.
In
you,
what
Dave.
Your rush is to get into Marshall's. Like, I got to have those discount shoes right now.
Actually, it's the TJ Maxx above it is so long. I mean, they're getting longer these days. And the one at Nordstrom Rack, that's pretty long. But you can't pass people on that one because it's too narrow.
Dave, very
if you try to, you're going to get in a fist fight with an angry
you
shopper.
Should, Dave, I think you should do an investigative report on the escalators in town.
It's
that's your
crisis in the city. I think Rahm has not addressed it. Every time they try to talk to him about it, he's not available.
He's not available. Know? Thanks, Dave. That's great.
Okay, great.
All right,
okay,
there you
bye.
Go. That's good. 630 says the worst is strip mall parking when you park at the Jewel and walk next door for coffee and your car gets booted. Yeah.
Has that happened? Really?
I think so.
Yeah, global parking. they're like infamous for it.
Are they really?
Mm-hmm.
Where's global parking?
I'm not sure where they're located, but I'm sure it's a tiny little cave underneath the city.
So you have to get
all right.
your car.
All right, guys, you want to do a top three?
Yeah, sure.
Let's do top three. Okay, let's do it. Let me read the prizes here, and we'll wrap this up. All right, the prizes tonight, if you get third or second place, you're going to get Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. That's for third place and second place. You get a pizza. For first place, you get a pair of tickets to Sensory Overload at the Montgomery Club on April 14th, a unique three-hour foodie adventure that indulges the five senses and explores Chicago's culinary scene. Get tickets and details at chicagotribune.com/sensory overload.
I should have called in.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Ready? Number three. That's terrible. That was terrible.
That was the worst.
That was the worst drum roll. Number three is actually one of our callers. It was, I believe, what did I do with the list? I already lost it. Here he is. Okay. Yes, it was Bill from Addison who drank his chocolate milk and it tasted like cottage cheese. Mm. Oh, that's just sad. You know, it's just like to get like a nice glass of chocolate milk from the deli. It's just sad.
It is sad.
All right, so Bill, you're going to get a pizza from Lou Malnati's. All right, number two was a texter. Number two is 331 who says, the worst is when parents let their kids run wild around a restaurant while they enjoy a peaceful, civilized meal, and their kids decide to have a seat at my table.
Yeah. So that's what, is that the one who wins the sensory?
No, they get the pizza in the Lou Malnati's.
Oh, well, at least they can eat that in peace in their house.
Exactly. The caveat is you have to, the kid has to eat it with you. You have to take a kid with you. All right, number one, and this is it. Are you ready for this? Number one was a text from Chris from Homewood. And it is, the worst is pulling into a grocery store parking lot. And every lane that I pull into park, I'm driving against the flow of traffic. All right, here we go. We got Chris on the line. Chris, congratulations. That happens, huh?
Hello?
Yeah, Chris, you won, man. You got first place. You're going to sensory
congrats.
Overload. Congrats.
Yes.
All that because you called out something that happens to all of us when we go down the wrong way in a parking lot.
Yeah, I texted you from the parking lot. As
maybe because you were texting, you weren't paying attention to where you were going.
Exactly.
Maybe.
All right, so you're going to win these tickets for sensory overload, which is great. And I don't think that the Montgomery Club has a parking lot like that, so I think you're going to be safe.
Okay, excellent.
All right, thanks for playing. Thanks, Chris. Thanks to everybody who played tonight. And thanks to Soli Santos and Elizabeth Gomez for being our panelists tonight on The Worst. Thanks, you guys.
Thank
Again,
you.
Playing
Thank
on
you.
April 7th at the Laugh Factory and all over town, Tuesdays and Wednesdays and first Fridays and other Tuesdays. There's so many things you guys get going on. What's your Twitter handle?
At WannaRumble.com, and that would be JUANNA.
Soli Comedy. SOLI Comedy.
All right. Thank you both for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's go, Bulls. 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 Let's go.
It's a download here on WGN Radio and another loss for the Chicago Bulls tonight with very little regular season remaining. The Chicago Bulls, who were two games back, now another percent. I don't know what Detroit did today, but the not a good showing at the UC, losing 102-100 to the Atlanta Hawks. Sam Panjanovic from WGN Radio Sports is with us now. Sam, was this pretty much a death knell tonight?
Yeah, I mean, they lost four in a row now, two to the Knicks, and you just lost a game that they call do or die. But Fred Hoiberg was happy with the first quarter. He said that after the game. If we play like that, we'll be okay. The guy's like delusional now. You know, there's 36-37. They came into contest today at ninth in the East. They have now fallen to 10th because the Wizards have hopped over the Bulls with this loss. And the quote that Hoiberg gave, and I looked around the room to make sure I heard the same thing as everybody else. He said, I'm proud of the way we went down swinging. Who says that?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
What else are you going to say at this point? You know, I mean, this is unprecedented for us, or at least not in the last, I mean, six seasons or so. I mean, the Bulls under Coach Thibs, I mean, they were the number one seed. They were the number two seed, number three, even down to four, five, whatever. But the point being that they were not a lottery team.
They've been in the playoffs every year since 2008, I believe, ever since Derrick Rose came into the league. He's about to miss the playoffs for the first time in his life. And you and I joked about this all the time, about, you know, the Vinny Del Negro era. They haven't been this bad since the end of 2010. And that was when Vinny Del Negro got blown out. They brought in Tom Thibodeau, and you know how that five-year period went. But it's just a total lack of defense. And, I mean, teams scoring 100 every night. I've counted them up. Opposing teams have scored 100 now 49 times.
Wow.
In 73 games. That's ridiculous. Hawks had 102 tonight. And the Bulls just foul guys now. Instead of just letting them blow by you, they foul them too. I mean, I think there were 5 or 6 three-point plays. It's lazy defense, and then at the last second you commit a foul. It's just it's not
it's not in those old John Wooden defensive tapes. You don't see any of it.
Well, I mean, not to mention, you know, I mean, let's draw comparisons to what happened in another sport, football, where the Bears brought in Mark Trestman because they wanted to upgrade their offense, didn't think much about their defense. Obviously, the results were pretty terrible. To the point where they got rid of Trestman after two seasons and they're back to playing defensive football. I mean, the Chicago Bulls under Coach Thibs, that was their trademark. They were in the games even without stars. Derrick Rose was out with knee injuries and they still were playing defensive against LeBron James. Is this backfiring for Bulls management to be a more offensive, spread the court kind of team?
Absolutely. The toughness is completely gone. And this is something that Taj Gibbs has chronicled pretty much all season long. And he talked about it, you know, a little bit today about just how teams, when they come in here, they're not afraid to play anymore. They come in here and they're like, oh, nobody's going to guard us. We're going to get whatever shots we want, and it's going to be a cakewalk. And it didn't used to be that way because when you come in, you face Gibson, you face Noah, you face Deng, you Jimmy Butler. You have these guys that would lock you up and make you earn everything that you got on the floor. And this year's team just doesn't do that. So I think they're not to say that they're soft, but they're certainly not tough.
Do they have, I mean, obviously, you know, I think there should be, but I don't think there's going to be any sort of coaching change in the ranks. You know, they'll stick with Coach Hoiberg. Is there a chance that we see sort of a blow up on this team with a lot of the stars that we know getting shipped other places, contracts not being extended, things like that, to try and give Fred Hoiberg a better roster to work in his system?
You've got to do something. And, you know, whether that's getting rid of the general manager, Gar Foreman, you're not going to get rid of Fred Hoiberg because you just gave him 5 years and $25 million. I don't think anybody's going to eat that money. So maybe you kick him up to the front office. I've heard that rumor. And then you bring in a different coach. I don't know. I mean, you would think it has to start with just a total reshaping of the roster. Let Pau Gasol go. Let Joakim Noah go. Try and trade Tony Snell, maybe Nico Meritich. You just have to get younger because while you have Derrick Rose, who still is never going to be what he once was, you have Jimmy Butler, who's on the fringe of being a star in this league, and then you have a bunch of older players and moving parts. So you need to get younger, find guys that can develop, and that's the game plan here. So get rid of all the guys that can't walk anymore that are day-to-day every single day. And
that's the whole roster, man.
You're rebuilding. I mean, that's what you have to do. I mean, the Warriors aren't going anywhere. Cavaliers probably not going anywhere, so you might as well just bite the bullet and try and build it back up in a year or two, and then you can contend and you're younger. And hopefully by then, they've got this offense figured out.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, does a rebuild include Derrick Rose? I mean, is Derrick Rose's days as a Chicago Bull numbered?
He's been their best Bull. That's what's so strange. I mean, in the last month or 6 weeks, Derrick's been the best player on the floor. And so now, are you going to get rid of him too? I guess you almost have to because you expect something else to go wrong. That's how a lot of fans feel. I know management cringes every time that he, you know, takes a spill onto the floor. But it's hard to get rid of a guy when he's actually performing. Now, it has to be consistent. But I don't know. That's a great question. And he's off the books at the end of next season. I'd say 50-50 right now. And if he's ever going to play again after 2017.
I think, I have to say it's – the one silver lining to this terrible season is that Derrick Rose did for the first time in a long time. You know, he played the full season.
And I was critical early because he was awful. And he was one of the first people to admit that. He had that double vision, yet he was taking more shots than anybody else. Remember? He said, I can't see, but I'm still shooting. Yeah, which made no sense. But he's really ironed out all of the wrinkles. He's been pretty solid, and he's not really shooting threes anymore. He's getting to the rim and he's opening teammates up. They're just not making shots. But no, as a whole, on this season, Derrick got better pretty much every single week.
You mentioned the Golden State Warriors, and I think we probably should talk about the elephant in the room, that the Golden State Warriors are on track to beat the Chicago Bulls record of 72-10. Is there any way they don't make it to 72-10?
There's a way if they want to rest starters down the stretch. I mean, coaches do that. They've been known to do that. But I think wholeheartedly this team is chasing that mark. And, you know, they're on pace to break it. I think they play the Spurs one or two more times, one at home, one on the road. They could certainly lose both of those two. But then they'd only have eight. So that's wiggle room for two more losses. At the least, they're going to tie it. Whether they break it, whatever, it doesn't really matter. You have to win the title. Remember, that team went 72-10. And then I think they only lost two games in the postseason. So, I mean, they just rolled over everybody. And, you know, for you to compare them historically, let's let the whole season play out, playoffs included, and then we'll step back and compare them.
You know, that I mean, is there a blueprint to be taken? I mean, there was this sort of blueprint on the coaching side. We kind of talked about that, the idea that, you know, a Steve Kerr-like coach and Fred Hoiberg coming in to take a defensive-minded team, make them the offensive and spread the floor and win. It didn't happen here in Chicago, but are other teams looking at what the Golden State Warriors have done and are thinking about emulating their model?
Well, there's a lot more pick and roll in the game. That's the way it's coming. You set a high ball screen and then you kick it to an open shooter. I mean, that's the way it's been moving. And, you know, that fast-flowing basketball up and down the floor is certainly popular. Some analysts are actually knocking Steph Curry, saying that he's ruining basketball because he wants to, you know, or he's creating all these players that don't want to pass and just shoot. But, I mean, if we're going to start knocking basketball, you got to start at the high school level when you play AAU and they all play together and they're all the best player on their team. And right. It's just, you know, it trickles down. But to answer your question, there are way more jump shots. There are way more three-pointers, and that seems to be the way the game is going. It's exciting. I mean, I'd rather watch a game in the 110s than in the 70s. But at the end of the day, you're not going to shoot yourselves to a championship, more or less. I mean, the Warriors were outstanding in the playoffs last year defensively. So if you can shoot it, that's great. But if you can't lock anybody up and stop the ball from going in your goal, it doesn't matter how well you shoot.
Well, that was the Bulls' problem, right? I mean, I think that, you know, they were playing that same kind of offense, and it's just the shooters who were supposed to rely on, the Doug McDermotts and the Tony Snells and the Nikola Mirotic, they weren't hitting those shots.
And when you miss a three-point shot, Justin, you take a shot from 20 feet, that rebound is going to bounce back out, and if you don't get back, you're cooked, and that's what happens. I mean, they miss all these shots that are wide-open threes, and then all of a sudden it's a four-on-two because nobody gets back. Pau Gasol is, like, running through quicksand on the floor to try and get back, and the guards don't get back. So if you don't make those long shots, it's layups the other way, and that's what happened tonight. That's how the Hawks went up, because the Bulls went cold. All of a sudden it's a huge run for Atlanta, and then you play a catch-up.
Wow. So what's left for the Bulls this season? I mean, they have a couple of games left. Is there any way that they run the table and find themselves in an 8 or a 7 seed? Because an 8 might as well miss the playoffs.
I don't think they'll make the postseason right now. They're three losses back of Detroit, and it's going to be tough. I mean, they're 36-37 right now. First time they've really been under 500 this late in a season, like we said, since 2010. But I just don't see it there mentally. I just don't think that they are ready to come in and go to war with each other. I think they can sense the end. This sort of happened last year in the postseason when you knew the Tom Thibodeau thing was over, mm-hmm. and they flat out quit. Remember, they lost by 20 in the last game of the playoffs against the Cavs. This is sort of what that is. I think you've got some guys that know that they're not going to be here next year, and maybe they're out the door with both feet. You've got some resentment still in that locker room over some issues. So I don't see it. I mean, I know the Pistons aren't great, but then again, the Bulls haven't been great either. So, no, I think they're going to be in the lottery looking for a ping pong ball maybe to go their way, and hopefully they can get into the top 10, maybe make a trade and go higher and go from there.
Sam Panjanovic, WGN Sports, cover the Bulls, the game tonight, the loss of the Hawks. Sam, thanks for joining us, man.
You got it. See ya.
That pretty much does it for the download tonight. Patty Vasquez coming up next with Live Music Mondays here on the show. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. We'll be back on Wednesday. We have the show. We don't have a show tomorrow night. It's the Blackhawks take the ice. But on Wednesday, this is going to be a good lineup. I'm looking forward to it. At the big table, we got Andrew WK, which would be great. That's great. How cool is that? Michael O'Brien also from SNL, from the short films. We'll do a character flaws. Got some great stuff, great comics lined up to do some performances. A lot of great stuff coming up this week.
That's a show.
That's a show. so that's coming up. It's crazy about the Bulls, man.
They stink.
What a weird thing. I've always felt like living in a big city with such a big market and fan base and everything, that any of the teams, the Bears, the Cubs, the Sox, the Bulls, the Blackhawks, they really have to underperform to not make the basic level playoffs.
Yeah.
I always feel that way about the Bears. I'm always like, you're the Chicago Bears. Like, maybe it's because I grew up under Dicka and the 85 Bears, where it was just a given they went 6-0.
You know, they went before they lost their first game, mm-hmm. you know, in week 8.
Yeah.
You know, but then they were in the playoffs. Maybe they didn't win the playoffs, but that was the that's what you did.
You're expecting right. expected them to make the playoffs.
Same with Jordan and the Bulls. Like you're going to make the playoffs. Doesn't matter where, you're going to make it. The Blackhawks are doing it now. They're in.
Yeah.
You know, where they've still got to figure out where, but they're in. They're not skipping years.
10 years in a row.
Yeah, and so the Bulls, it's really hard to, especially the Bulls.
Eight years in a row, something like
that.
It's
amazing to think about, you know, a Chicago Bulls team in this NBA in a known poor NBA East. The Eastern Conference is a joke. I mean, we kind of made the joke earlier naming teams that weren't real that were ahead of them.
Yeah.
You know? But you got, I mean, the Pistons are in, the Charlotte, the Boston Celtics, the Wizards just jumped ahead of them. Come on, none of those teams are going anywhere.
And what happened? I mean, there was a time during the season where they were a couple of games. They might have been, not only were they ever in the lead, but they were within a few games.
They were like a game back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they just lost it.
Collapsed.
I don't know. It's also one of those markets, though, that I don't think that they should sit back on losing. I mean, if you miss the playoffs in the NBA East, you know, something needs to be done. I'm sorry, the coach or the general manager or the players, something needs to be done. But it's like, you know, for far too long, even with Lovie Smith, the Bears were that team where they would go 8-8 or 7-9 or 9-7 or 10-6 but not make the playoffs. And then the next year, like, well, we're not really changing much. We're just going to tweak it.
Yeah.
Like, that's unacceptable. That's unacceptable.
Yeah. Every team should make the playoffs.
Every team.
Every team in Chicago.
The White Sox has been 10 years. I mean, what we see now with the Chicago Cubs, maybe they don't win the World Series because baseball's fluky like that.
Yeah, injuries, you can have anybody, long season. Mm-hmm.
But now the expectation after last year is they are in the playoff hunt. In baseball, it's different because you can be in the playoff hunt and not make the playoffs and still have a successful season.
Mm-hmm.
But they are now the expectation here in Chicago is you are in the playoff hunt.
For the next 5 to 7 years.
Right. That's it.
It'll be disappointing if that doesn't happen.
And, I mean, you have Derrick Rose. You have Jimmy Butler. You have Paul Gasol. You have all these pieces there. It's not like they're in a rebuild. This is going to go down in history as one of the more underwhelming, disappointing professional sports seasons for a Chicago franchise.
Yeah.
Because this was not expected for them to take a step this far back to go from a 3 or 4 seed, which they were last year, to out of the playoffs in the NBA East. That's not acceptable.
And it's always exciting for me in for basketball and hockey, in that, you know, the playoffs are here, the weather's getting nicer, so it's like spring, it's nice out. There's a Saturday afternoon playoff game where you don't feel bad about day drinking. You just think it's an excuse to watch let's watch the playoffs.
That's such a good point. Hoiberg and this crew.
They're ruining my day drinking plans.
They ruined our day drinking opportunity. Like a day-night Bulls-Blackhawks playoff.
Yes.
That's
such a beautiful day.
Ruined.
Because you can't just go watch the Cavaliers and day drink.
It has to be your team.
Yeah, it has to
There's
be your
no
team.
Way you're getting out of your house. For a babe, it's the Bulls game 3. They've got to beat the Raptors. I remember when we had to go to a wedding, a Memorial Day weekend, one of those years with Jordan, and my family went out to Ohio. And I remember like we checked in at a hotel and then we had to get to the service. And we were late to the service because it was a day, Saturday day, Pacers, Bulls. And my mom was so mad she went and sat in the car. Because we were all pretending like we were getting ready, putting on the clothes, but we were just watching Jordan and Reggie Miller and all that.
Oh, man, I feel sorry for during that whole Bulls run, people got married those Saturday nights when there's a Bulls game on. That's terrible.
That's terrible. For that, Michael Jordan apologized. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. Patty Vasquez up next.